It's time for TWiT This Week in Tech. John C. Dvorak is here, Ben Thompson from Taiwan, Jason Snell from down the road. We're going to talk about 10 years of podcasting, 33 years of PC, a couple of big anniversaries, a couple of leaks. The Motorola 360 shows up on Best Buy's site, and the Thailand Commissioner of Radio Telecommunications reveals there's a new iPhone coming. All that and more coming up on TWiT.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for This Week in Tech is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com. This is TWiT, This Week in Tech, episode 471, recorded August 17th, 2014. It is brisk. This Week in Tech is brought to you by Casper, an online retailer of premium mattresses for a fraction of the price, because everyone deserves a great night's sleep. Get $50 off any mattress purchase by visiting caspersleep.com/twit. Don't forget to use the offer code TWIT. And by stamps.com. Start using your time more effectively with stamps.com. Use stamps.com to buy and print real U.S. postage the instant you need it, right from your desk. For my special offer, go to stamps.com, click the microphone, and enter TWIT. That's stamps.com, offer code TWIT. And by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create your own professional website or online portfolio. For a free 2-week trial and 10% off, go to squarespace.com and use the offer code TWIT. And by ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter makes hiring faster, easier, and cheaper. Post your job to 50-plus job boards with one click. Try ZipRecruiter with a free 4-day trial now at ZipRecruiter.com/TWIT. That's ZipRecruiter.com/TWIT. It's time for TWiT This Week in Tech, the show where we take a look at the week's tech news. A really expert, astute, smart panel today. I'm a little intimidated, I must confess. Editorial Director at IDG, Jason Snell, is here, formerly Editor-in-Chief of MacBreak Weekly. MacWorld. Thank you.
There we go.
I knew I'd have trouble today. But you're now PC World, Mac World, the whole world.
The whole shebang.
He's got the whole world.
Yeah. Mac World is where my heart is. But,
yeah.
But yes.
Great to have you.
It's great,
Jason,
to be here. Great to be back.
Also, John C. Dvorak, who is a minister without portfolio here at the
Yeah, that's show. It. That's a ticket.
Yeah. Anything you want to talk about, you can, whether it's wine, vinegar.
Vinegar.
Tech. Yeah. I got to start making vinegar because we never could finish a bottle.
Well, at least you can start storing it.
Can you get me a barrel? What do you put it in?
Oh, don't put it in a barrel. No.
What? Rubber? Plastic?
You have to put it in something where you can actually see it.
Is it like the scene in Breaking Bad where Jesse tries to dissolve the body, but he doesn't put it in a plastic tub? He puts him in the bathtub and it goes right through the floor. Is it like that?
No.
Also with us, Ben Thompson of Stratechery. Ben has worked everywhere, including Apple and Automatic. And his blog, Stratechery, is I guess you're kind of like an analyst for hire, kind of. For anybody who wants to know more, you could subscribe and understand what's going on. He's currently talking to us from Taiwan.
Yes. Well, I mean, and there are free articles every week.
I read it religiously. In fact, that's how we got you on the show. I said, this guy's smart.
Well, I appreciate it.
What I didn't realize is that you used to, when you worked at Apple, you used to do marketing for Apple University.
Not marketing. I was ubiquitous, an intern, but yeah, I was for Apple University back when no one really knew what it was. Obviously, there's more details coming out. But
we didn't until last week when the New York Times wrote a long article about it. What did you think of that? Was it accurate given your experience?
I think, yeah, they got the big stuff right. I think it's one of those things, like a lot of stuff with Apple, where it's kind of taken on this outsized sort of like mystique about it. You know, and I think that the way it comes across in the article probably is about as flattering as could be. I think when you get actually into the specifics and the details, there's, you know, they're like anything else, trying to figure stuff out. But it was certainly, I mean, I think from my perspective, it's very useful because the more that's in the public domain, the more that I can talk about it.
Yeah.
So there's a big thing in Adam Wyszynski had a big piece, or he's written quite a few things about Apple, and he's talked about it. So that was kind of like, since then, I've talked about it a little
Adam's great. I love Adam. And if he's been talking about it, then the world knows, I guess. But the New York Times, Brian X. Chen, really focused on this Picasso Bulls series and how one of their teachers used this as slides to explain how you go from complex to simple.
I think that was actually new. That was kind of the big thing when I was there. That's
oh really?
Like, I was really excited.
This
about
is
it.
Old then.
well, no, like within the faculty or whatever, right. Which is what they're called. Everyone was like, you know, oh, this is great. This really gets it. I think the big problem I have with it and is yes, it's great and it is a wonderful illustration to get at the idea of simplicity and what Apple absolutely strives for. At the end of the day, there's a very thin line between a really useful analogy and kind of cliche. And I think the article kind of veered a little into cliche from my perspective. Whereas what I found most fascinating, interesting was some of the real like nuts and bolts stuff that they talked about when it came to things like organizational design and managing change and like very kind of much more in the gritty details that I think really do make Apple particularly unique. It's one thing to talk about a painting and how this is about simplicity. But at the end of the day, like, how do you actually apply that and make it meaningful? And I do think there's more stuff that the university has done that is more, like, really useful and interesting. But that probably wouldn't fit very well in a New York Times profile anyway. So,
actually, I think that profile gave Apple the permission to put Joel Podolny's picture on their executive. They've redone this executive profiles this week.
Yeah, that was really interesting.
And Joel, who is vice president and dean, he was former dean at the Yale School of, or was it Harvard School of, no, it was Yale, business management, right?
Yeah.
And now is full-time at Apple teaching, and he's right there on the front page, as is Paul Deneuve, who's one of the newest hires. He's from a fashion, Yves Saint Laurent, right?
Yeah.
YSL. But I thought if you're going to read tea leaves, the most interesting thing is up at the top where you've got Tim Cook, the CEO. Number two, Angela Ahrens.
Well, I believe alphabetically she is number two.
Oh, that shouldn't be it. So is it? Okay, so Cook first and then alphabetical after that. But Johnny Ive's got to look at that and go, hey, wait a minute.
Well,
I should be up there.
He should
well, I'm online too.
A-A-V-E. Pronounced
oh, it's alphabetical.
Well, if you want to get into, you know, Apple criminology, I think actually, from my opinion, the most interesting part of, and I did write about this in that daily update, was the correction. And the correction talks about how they originally referred to Podolny as the head of HR and he no longer is.
In the New York Times, yeah.
Right, exactly. And so when he started, he was not. He was just doing Apple University. And then Jobs asked him to take over HR, I think with the idea of there being kind of redoing HR and like in a new sort of way. And I don't think it went as well probably as everyone would have liked it. And so now there's more traditional HR head and he's back to doing Apple University.
I have learned as a
really interesting
entrepreneur that HR is a fairly tough thing to do well.
That's why you hire specialists, usually heartless people.
Heartless. Mm. They've got to be. That's why you bring in George Clooney to fire people because you don't want to do it. No, really, seriously, it is a highly skilled job. It is not.
Well, I don't know about the skill. Heartless isn't something you don't need to go to school for.
There are good HR people and there are bad HR people. I think HR is a problem in tech because you get so many headstrong tech industry executives who really, and Steve Jobs was a great example of this, who really want to do you know, what they want to do and they don't really care
illegal things.
Yeah, they don't care about the law
or treating their employees fairly or anything like that. And a good HR person is the one who has to push back a little back
Steve,
and we can't do that. That's
a violation of the Sherman Antitrust Act, yeah. Steve.
Yeah.
So well, not to put a too fine a print on it, like what Apple did to its employees is terrible. Like
you're talking about the Jobs thing.
Yeah, the collusion.
Right,
collusion.
Fix it. Like to say that you can't, that no one's going to recruit you is to basically limit pay.
Right.
And I'm not one to complain about Apple's money and say that they ought to do this or that. But in this specific case, it's quite warranted. Apple was raking in like the greatest profits ever at the same time they were denying a fair wage to their employees. Like people aren't nearly as upset about this as they should be, in my opinion.
Well, it's not over. The DOJ, didn't the court overturn the settlement and say, let's go back because it's not a sufficient punishment? And there was a list published, a handwritten list.
Take some of the executives from Apple and throw them in jail. That would change things.
Yeah, unfortunately, the guy who probably was behind it is probably Steve Jobs.
Other people had to sign off on it.
Yeah.
Well, and you can see
Hitler was behind a lot of things too, and the other guys went to jail.
The DOJ settled like a few years ago over this. For people to catch up on this, Apple agreed with many other companies not to poach each other's employees, and that is actually against the Antitrust Act, because the idea is a company keeps wages and salaries low and keeps workers in their place by making sure that they can't get a better offer, that they can't actually negotiate, they can't get competitive. The DOJ reached a settlement with Apple, Adobe, Google, Intel, Intuit, and Pixar in 2010. But I think, as I remember, the courts just overturned that settlement.
Yeah, this is still going on. And the Pixar thing is another example where I sense Steve Jobs' influence, and it's the same thing. It's from the perspective of somebody running a company. You're like, God, we keep losing momentum because our people keep getting poached by other companies, and that's really inconvenient for us. And I honestly don't believe that the reason they did it was to save money, but it has the net effect of suppressing the wages of the people. If you're an Apple engineer and Google comes and offers you a raise, the response should be that Apple should pay you more to keep you, or say it's okay, you can walk, not to make a deal with Google to withdraw their offer, which is essentially on a large scale what this collusion did. And it's awful.
That's exactly right. And I think Jason is right to say that it was, you know, to avoid disruption. I think the other thing with Jobs in particular is, and what was the most fascinating about being at Apple is there's the whole, like, everywhere in tech has the whole idea of like, oh, we're changing the world and all this sort of thing. And it's, and a lot of it is just talk, but at Apple, it sounds just cliche and corny, but it really is a very real sentiment. Like, there is a sense of changing, of mission driven. And certainly that was the case with Jobs. And I think he had a hard time with anyone that would even consider, like, how could you even fathom wanting to go or work anywhere else? And I imagine there's a whole potent mixture of stuff that went into this. But at the end of the day, I mean, it was wrong. And your point about HR needing to stand up, that sort of stuff, is exactly right.
Imagine standing up to Steve Jobs, whoever you are, though. I mean, that would be very, very difficult.
Or anybody under pressure who's got a lot of VC investment and has a startup, right? I mean, those startups happen so fast. They get used to breaking rules or not having rules. And at some point, you need HR. And then the HR person just is seen as an impediment who's ruining your nimble startup from pivoting into whatever it's pivoting into. And it's a tough
fault.
And I do believe this is one of the reasons why you hear so many horror stories about bad behavior in Silicon Valley. One of the reasons is, I mean, there's not a culture of responsibility in a lot of these companies, because by the time the culture is built, you know, that's when they say, oh, we should probably have some HR people in here.
Right.
I mean, HR isn't a solution, and oftentimes it can be a problem too. But I do think the grown-ups sometimes are the HR people, and if they don't have any power, then it's too late.
Apple, go ahead.
Oh, no, I just say the one thing that does kind of, I think, raises eyebrows, though, is that the judge presiding this is in
Lucy
this
Coe.
Case. No, it's Denise Cote, who I think is actually
Cote.
The first.
Okay.
Oh, is it Cote?
I don't know. I say Cote just because it sounds more French.
I mean, who, by the way, I think is not getting nearly enough credit for what's happening with Amazon and Hachette, because like this whole mess is her fault.
The one who imposed the much hated oversight at Apple. The guy who went in and interviewed Apple executives,
her friend who
happened to be her buddy.
she basically denied a market based solution to the Amazon Hachette issue.
Right,
and she hardly seems impartial when it comes to Apple. So I think her rejecting the settlement, possibly is the right thing to do. It certainly, I think, raises eyebrows, you know, justifiably so.
I'm looking at this article from August 8th. It said it was Lucy Coe who was the judge. The award, or the agreed upon settlement, was $324 million. That was overturned by U.S. District Judge Lucy Coe in San Jose, who ruled that the amount to be paid by the Giants was insufficient.
Yeah. Oh, you're right. I am totally wrong. Well,
but Lucy Coe is well known, notorious, as the judge of the Samsung Apple lawsuit. So it seems like there's really only two judges in Silicon Valley, and they're responsible for everything going on today.
You're right, I think I have a much bigger beef with Cote. So that actually That makes me feel better.
Côté was absolutely clearly an anti-Apple advocate. On the other hand, you could probably make the case that Judge Koh is pro-Apple. She's certainly been ruling in Apple's favor in the Samsung lawsuit. I don't know. I'm sure both of these judges are
conflicts of interest.
They
left
have
and
no
right.
conflict of interest. They're good people doing their best in a difficult environment. They got to wear those black robes in a hot day.
The summer,
you don't have to wear the black robe.
Yeah. You don't?
You can wear a white robe.
You can?
Sure.
You look like a choir director.
There's no law that says you have to wear the black robe.
Really?
No. Show me some evidence where there's a law.
A judge can wear whatever they want?
I don't know if they can wear whatever. Probably. Why not?
I'd wear a powdered
wig. It's for the bull crap. It's just to make it, you know, make yourself look more imposing.
Well, it's the scales of justice. Wouldn't it be good if they wore a little, blindfold?
You can get voted out if you wore something. Well, maybe the wig would be good.
A powdered wig.
This would be a great This Week in Law topic.
Bring up in the law.
Judges wear black robes, and are they not required to?
Why would they be required to? How would this work?
You get the job. You go to the office. Peg on the back of the door is a black robe, a note from your predecessor that says, wear this.
I'm going to look it up in the Book of Knowledge.
Will you? Look it up in the Book of Knowledge while I'm doing the show.
Why do judges wear
I love this.
Black
the,
robes?
The secretary of the Thailand FCC, the National Broadcasting and Telecommunications Commission, tweeted that he had approved two new iPhone models, the A1586 and 1524. Apple, a little miffed. They're saying, what? You tweeted that you've approved two new iPhone models. They've actually asked to meet with him. He said, no, there's no confidential information here. This is within my job. I'm supposed to publicize this approval. But they do point out, you've never tweeted before, Mr. Minister. So we know there are two new iPhone models, at least in Thailand. Do you think, Jason, that's 4.7 and 5.5?
Well, that's the rumor. That wouldn't be unreasonable.
Or would
unless
it be,
it's a variation on an existing model.
Yeah, like a 5SC.
Something.
For the cheap.
Subparagraph. H
subparagraph
very confusing title, but yeah, it could be. I mean, this is the problem with these devices is between the supply chain and the regulatory bodies, it is hard. These right. are not things designed to keep a secret,
right?
Which Apple
and you have
prefer.
To submit these. You know, I'm sure the FCC has whatever they are as well, because it takes a while to get approval. So, remember when the iPhone first came out? It was announced in, what was it, January, and pending FCC approval, and it took them 6 months before they actually released it. And one of the reasons they announced it so early is because they knew it could leak out of the FCC.
The FCC does have some ways around it. It seems like the details now are often released publicly the day that the product is announced.
Right.
So I think that once you've got – the problem with the iPhone was that Apple didn't want to admit that it existed, and it was going to have to start the process.
If it's a first-time product, there's a different –
right.
track than if this is an update on an existing product, that
right.
kind of thing.
The other thing, too, is I think kind of one of the objections to the 5.5-inch rumor has been that there haven't been parts leaks like there have for the 4.7-inch. But I think over the last week, there's been actually several. So I go back and forth as to whether it exists or not, but that certainly has been a change of signal as far as that goes.
I actually want to, since you're in Taiwan, we're going to take a break. I want to ask you about the OnePlus One fiasco and maybe get your take on this. Because I talked to one of our editors who's also from Taiwan. He says it's not what you think. But and then we're going to find out why justices wear black robes.
Yes,
John C. Dvorak has learned the facts, but that's coming up.
You're going to do a teaser.
That's a tease, baby.
Boy.
Because first I want to talk about my mattress.
You know, podcasts don't need teasers. You've talked about this before.
I know, because all you have to do, if it's just basically saying fast forward now.
Yeah.
Right?
So you're actually by hurting your sponsor.
The thing is, you're so good, you're so entertaining with these ads that I don't see anyone doing
this. This is
that.
One you don't want to miss. This is a brand new sponsor. You are going to want to stay tuned for this ad. It's about mattresses. In fact, we're going to do an unveiling. I have in my foyer a box. Yeah, it's not even a very big box. Yay, big. Inside that box is a queen mattress from Casper. And I can't even believe. I liked it. I thought, I haven't even slept on it yet. And I thought, this is so cool. And I sent one to Henry in Colorado because he's got a, in fact, he just flew out today. And he's going to have a new broom, and he needs a bed. And I said, Henry, I'm going to send you a Casper
in a box.
He has
a new broom. You said broom.
New room.
Okay.
He's living in a house with nine other guys in his frat.
Wow.
That's going to be fun. Yeah. These are incredible. But, you know, even if they give it to you for 100 days to try. And I got to tell you, buying a mattress is not a great experience. You go to a mattress showroom. You lie down. You're fully clothed. You're wearing your shoes. Somebody's giving you the evil eye. And you're pretending, you know, well, I want. Well, how would this be to sleep? That's not a good way to test a mattress. Casper is revolutionizing the mattress industry. First of all, very affordable. The queen mattress I bought, Henry, $800. Good deal. They cut out the showroom and the reseller. They pass that savings directly on to you. People have told me this is the most comfortable mattress they've ever had. I'm going to be the judge of that. We're going to open it up tonight, and I'm going to sleep on my Casper. Just the right combination of latex and memory foam. I love memory foam. Because you sink in, but it's firm. It's weird. It's just what you want. It's a firm mattress that's comfy and soft. It provides long-lasting comfort and support. $500 for a twin, $950 for a king-size mattress. You could buy it online, and there is no risk because they will deliver it free, and you have 100 days. 100 days. What is that? 3.27 months to try it out. You don't have to lie down in a showroom, and the return's easy if you decide after 100 days you don't like it. This is the way to try it. And by the way, made in the USA. This is great. We're going to give you $50 off your brand new Casper. Go to Casper, C-A-S-P-E-R, sleep.com. Caspersleep.com/twit. And, you know, this is nice. For every mattress purchased at Casper, they're going to donate $50 to Child's Play. So you save $50. Child's Play gets $50. Oh, you want to save more? Refer a friend. You'll get $50 off your mattress. Actually, you've already got the mattress, so you get a $50 retail gift card. They'll get $50 off their mattress. They do limit you to 10 referral redemptions per customer, but that's a lot of money. You could be doing pretty well here. Brand new sponsor, really thrilled to welcome them. It's a startup. I love this idea. Caspersleep.com/.
Can you buy one with Bitcoin?
You know, that's great. I don't know. I don't
great
think so.
That is, but okay.
Buy it with Bitcoin. I'm going to ask them if they will let me buy it with Bitcoin. Beautiful. It's somewhere between, by the way, firmness, a cotton ball and a shiny diamond. Not quite a piece of jello, not quite a dense novel. Somewhere in the middle. It's the Goldilocks standard of just right. You are going to really love it. And I think it's so cool. I'm going to open the box tonight and sleep on it tonight.
Are you going to film it?
Yeah. Because I don't understand. Did you see the box? It's this big. How a queen mattress. It's going to go... Boom! Can't wait.
I like to see you get it back in the box.
Oh, it's impossible.
That's a good question.
Say you can return it.
You can return it. I don't think you're required to get it back in the box. That would be pretty funny.
You ever see those T-shirts they have compressed to this little ball?
Yeah. They shoot them out of a T-shirt cannons. That's what we need.
You do.
A T-shirt cannon.
Yeah, and you should...
I could shoot these guys point blank.
Yeah, knock them off.
Boom!
Boom! Ah! Pretty close.
Or a mattress cannon, yeah.
A mattress cannon. That'd be fun. Are you guys, did you do the ALS? You should do this.
I'm not doing any of these things. It's dumb.
Okay, I told the world, I will do it if John tells me to do it. This is the ice bucket challenge. Everybody's doing it. Bill Gates has done it. Mark Zuckerberg, Tim Cook did it.
Yep.
Jeff Bezos did it at an all-hands meeting. So did Tim Cook, for that matter.
Let's all do it because they did it.
Did you see Bill Gates?
It's peer pressure.
Ice bucket challenge.
Bill's going to catch a cold.
He takes it fairly seriously.
Yeah.
Well, he may not, because if you watch the video, you be the judge of this. It doesn't look like there's actually any ice in Bill's bucket, which is not a euphemism. That's actually, you know. So here he is. Bill's getting the challenge from Mark Zuckerberg.
Oh, wow.
So this is how it works. It's to raise awareness and money for ALS, which is Lou Gehrig's disease.
Right.
And you dump a bucket of, it's kind of dumb, a bucket of ice water on yourself.
Yeah, that's to me, it indicates Lou Gehrig's disease to dump a bucket of water, ice water.
It doesn't seem like it's related in any way. Of course, then you challenge three other people. Zuckerberg challenged Bill. And, of course, Bill's taking this seriously as an engineering problem. So he pretends to weld stuff.
You know, he's got better things to do with his time, it seems to me.
I think he's you know, give him $100 million and leave the welding to someone else.
Doesn't make sense.
But watch carefully. He's about to do it.
This is a publicity stunt for him.
Well, that's what I, this is what bothers me.
This whole thing's a publicity stunt.
I'll do it in private. How about that?
I'm going to challenge three more people.
I won't make a video.
Why bother doing it at all?
Ryan Seacrest. And Chris, there's plenty of Ted,
charities out there. You can give to ones you want to give to.
Yeah, it feels like black.
You shouldn't be shamed into giving to any one of them.
Good luck.
And watch. There's no ice. I think it's warm water.
Yeah, where's the ice?
There's no ice. I think they said, Bill, if you do that with ice, you're going to have a stroke.
It's a nice bucket full of water. Yep.
Yeah.
Good times.
Yeah. Looks just like the wet dog he is.
That's the first bath Bill's had in years.
I didn't say that.
Ouch. Ooh. I hear that.
Oh, I got one of the guys in the room here. He's allowed to have fun, Dvorak. Yeah, that looks like fun.
I think Elon Musk did a equivalently...
put Jell-O in the bucket.
complicated.
That'd be funny.
It apparently involving, I don't know, multiple... And his five kids.
They each had their own buckets.
They each had their own bucket.
They should have thrown a bucket at him. Yeah. I think that'd be more entertaining.
He's looking more like Tony Stark all the time, mm-hmm. isn't he?
He thinks he's Tony Stark. I mean, he was modeled after. Tony Stark was supposedly modeled after him.
The one in the movie.
Yeah, the one in the movie. So.
Anyway, so you say it's okay if I don't do that. I can give to whatever charity I want.
What are you asking me for?
If you don't do it, you give $100 to
AI. Even that's kind of blackmail, though, right? Yeah. You gave $100.
So I was skeptical about it. My friend Lex Friedman did a bucket challenge, and when I analyzed the video frame by frame, and believe me, I analyzed it frame by frame.
Where is this?
It appears. I wish I had the link to it. It appears that the ice completely missed him, and he remained completely dry. And so I basically made him do it again. When he did it again, I wrote a check.
Talk about
that's a good
extortion.
Friend, yeah.
Holy cow!
Well, I made him get wet.
Did you see Weird Al's? The funny thing about Weird Al is he doesn't mention ALS. He doesn't...
Listen to the chat room, a-hole. What if your son had ALS, Leo?
No, I actually have a very close friend who died of ALS.
There you go.
I am not against ALS. And
why would you be? It's a horrible product.
But Lex is in the chat room.
Well, disease. I'm sorry.
It's a terrible disease. And I'm not against, I'm not in any way... saying anything negative about that or the ALS Foundation, which is a good group or association. So here's Weird Al. I don't know if ALS, the ALS Association did this, or I think it was kind of done by somebody independently.
They've picked it up.
But they've certainly picked it up. And it's been good. Well, they've raised more than $10 million.
I think it's a very, very good
Here's Weird
promotion.
Al. Somewhere like Hawaii, I think.
What a perfect day. The only thing that would make this better is if I had a big bucket of ice water dumped on my head right now.
He actually has ice in his.
Yeah.
Awesome! Okay, I'm calling out Barack Obama, the Dalai Lama, and the Pope. Your move, guys!
That's pretty good.
Okay, he doesn't mention any charity at all.
No, but the
so
Dalai
he's it's
Lama
a parody of the thing.
Yeah, Dalai Lama. Yeah, that'd be one. I'd watch that.
All right, so it is effective marketing, and also effective marketing. OnePlus, they make the flagship killer phone for 2014. Really, I mean, not only great specs, but very inexpensive. $299 for 16 gigs, $350 for 64 gigs. I'll unlock it so you can play with it.
Try to wreck it.
But their marketing has left a little bit to be desired. When they first launched,
this is the one you can't get the back off of.
Yeah, you tried last time.
Yeah, I know.
It's not designed. Well, I think you can and put a different back on it. I guess. Marketing. Ooh, by the way, you can't buy this.
What are you doing with one?
You have to get an invitation. I actually did
Jason,
not.
Jason, did you get an invitation?
I'm going to need to check my mailbox again. I don't recall.
Seeing no.
It. Yeah, you didn't. That's the
way
point.
You get this thing is.
Do you dump a bucket of ice water?
You can either
head?
Get an invitation if you want to click how to get one on the OnePlus site, and it'll tell you the way you get one is by either getting an invitation for somebody else who's already got one. Don't ask me because I don't have any. Or you play a game, or you do a contest or promotional event. So the first one, which was horrible. Send us a video of you destroying your smartphone, and you'll get an invitation to buy another one at full price.
Oh, nice.
Well,
and
that stinks.
People pointed out that is really a waste of a smartphone, that there are plenty of people who would take this used smartphone. You might even be able to sell it And certainly you should recycle it. But so they pulled back. Now, this is what I want to ask Ben about, because I think there might be a cultural gulf here. This week they said, well, we want to let the ladies jump ahead in line. So, ladies, what we're asking you to do
sexist.
Is put...
Sexist?
Whoa, it gets worse.
Uh-oh.
Put the OnePlus logo on your body somewhere. We'll put a picture of it up on our forums. We'll let the forums vote, and the ladies who have the best picture will get an invitation
to... wet T-shirt contest.
Okay, that's what I thought. That's what the world thought. Gina Trapani, who has a OnePlus also, is thinking about sending hers back. She's so incensed.
Good for her.
However, and OnePlus has backed off. However, Tony Wang, who's our senior editor here and is from Taiwan, said, you know, it might be a cultural thing. He says, when you see these people, you see people wear logos all the time. Not on their butts or their boobs, but on their cheeks, on their hands, on their arms.
They do.
Is that true, Ben?
I'm not sure. I mean, I don't really have any sort of defense. And to be clear, OnePlus is from China, not from Taiwan.
Oh, I thought they were from Taiwan. They're from mainland China.
Yeah, they're in Shenzhen. Like,
I didn't realize that. Yeah, oh, well, then, okay, so it's not Taiwanese.
Just the drop. The
I do think, in general, there is a problem here. I am by no means defending it, of women being objectified in tech. I mean, the whole booth babe phenomena is kind of originated on, you know, in this side of the world. If, you know, everyone's been to Computex every June, kind of the big, it's not as big as it used to be, the big PC, annual PC brouhaha. Like, there's still the whole booth babe thing going on. And even just going to popular areas, they'll be there promoting a game or promoting an app. So there's, it's, I have zero defense for it. I think it's horrible. I think it's highly objectionable. And quite honestly, I'm appalled they did it, but I'm also a little happy, because then they can get their rear end kind of handed to them for having done it.
Yeah.
And
it brought a lot of attention to this whole issue.
And negative, and you know, yeah. and rightly so. And you know, I have no defense of it. I think, I hate that that happens here, that sort of culture. It's weird because, I mean, in some respects, there are aspects of being a woman here that are actually quite good. I mean, I think the head of HTC is a woman. There's quite a few executives that are, the head of the opposition party is a woman. So there's aspects of society here that are fairly progressive, but then there's parts like this that are, you know, antediluvian.
Are you saying the same thing about Latino culture? Being antediluvian, it happens to have all kinds of sexual innuendo on all kinds of angles. Just wondering where you draw the line.
I draw the line if it's sexist.
You think the Latino culture, you know, on Univision is a sexist, horrible thing?
I'm not saying all Latino.
I don't know anything about it.
Ben,
I'm just asking,
step back, because I'm going to tell you, this guy's just trouble.
I'm just wondering what you think. Maybe you don't.
No one's saying Latino culture is reprehensible, but there are, to the degree that in any culture there are things like this, that's reprehensible. Yeah.
Like what?
Like this contest. Yeah. Here's OnePlus's response. Women make up half the world, and we want to help them be more involved in tech. We understand our contest.
Hire them. Give them a job.
Yeah, give them a job. There you go. We understand our contest was in bad taste and have therefore pulled it.
I find it more reprehensible that these guys haven't got the backbone to stick with what they came up with. They should have said, we're sorry, or, you know, and, you know, which we thought was a good idea. The way they handle it is as though they wimped out on it. I think they should have gone through with the contest.
Here's an example.
What's it going to hurt? Who's getting killed by
here's,
this?
Here's
we
some
have
posts.
People
this is Mandy
in the Middle
Lee. This
East
is...
being strung up and heads chopped off.
She said, I'm not offended by this. I think she wants a phone.
This is full.
Do you want an example?
Outrage.
Yeah, give me an example. Here's an example of what I think Tony was mentioning. This is MSI's How to Build a PC, where the logo is on someone.
Okay, that's not at all sexist.
What if it's just
some
guy?
A bikini?
This is How to Build a Computer from MSI.
All right, so and another.
It's very hot in that room. She's
all right. You can stop showing that yet. It looks like we're pandering too. All right. So I think there's no cultural justification.
This outrage, this faux outrage.
It's not faux, it's genuine.
We got people being murdered in the streets.
Well, that's bad too.
I think it's a little worse, actually.
It's definitely worse. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't mean we should allow anything short of murder is okay.
I don't think that we should be telling the Chinese what to do in such a way. If they want to do these contests, just don't take part in the contest.
Right, and don't buy the phone.
And you've got the phone. This is
well,
you're
I
the
bought
biggest
it beforehand.
Offender at the table. You've actually supported
but that was
this
before,
company.
But that was before. They
I'm really, unclear what you're objecting to, John.
I don't know. I'm just bitching and moaning.
Yeah. Well, no,
Ben,
but I think,
Ben,
I,
don't try
I think
to be logical.
I think it's worth. No, I think it's.
I'm just
I think
complaining.
It's worth calling out because the reality is one plus one has made a fairly significant splash. I had one myself. And if you don't object, then what is the difference? I mean, of course, no one, I don't think you're calling for anyone to endorse the action, but to not speak up is not any different now, than
what
going
if,
along with it. And
one,
quite frankly, yes, maybe it's easy to be upset on Twitter and that doesn't make a huge difference. And yes, to make a real difference for women in tech is to actually change your daily actions and all sorts of stuff. But for goodness sake, this is appalling. I think it's okay to call it that.
Yeah, even if there are, it's not murder. It's. By the way, what if OnePlus's response were, "Oh, let's do it for guys instead"? Would that be okay?
Now you brought up a conundrum.
But that didn't happen. So why are we dealing?
That's
in
what
a
they should have done.
I would, if
there's
I had
a reason why it
that.
Didn't happen.
Yeah. That would have been better.
Yeah, I could. I mean, I can formulate a. Reason that it would be okay. It's because no.
By the way,
do you like the phone, Ben?
I had no issue with the phone specifically.
Oh, I like the phone.
Okay, there
phone.
We go. I don't like this phone.
Why don't you like that phone?
I find it very difficult to menu through. It for one thing, doesn't have like the back button, which I really
You know what? That's one thing that is kind of weird. You have the option of putting it on screen like on your Nexus 5, but they have capacitive back buttons that are not lit very
and what's
well.
What's this? What is this like?
That's just a widget. That's how I've set mine up. That's not how you would have yours set up.
And then it's just you can't get off these screens. There's no way of moving, navigating. It's terrible.
You should get an iPhone. Get out of here.
Now, I had somebody in the chat room complain that I just derailed the show with my commentary.
No, that's legitimate. You don't like the phone because of the things on the screen.
No, there's a bunch of things I don't like. But I think I think I was being demeaned. By the chat room.
I think you should go spank them.
Well, I think probably people found your comments demeaning.
Mm-hmm. Well, I would hope so.
Fair enough.
All right. Why do judges wear black robes?
Apparently, just as I said, it's just tradition. You can wear whatever you want. In fact, one of the Supreme Court justices apparently once went on the Supreme Court with no robe.
Well, and William Rehnquist had like gold stripes put on his cuffs because he saw it in a play and thought it looked cool.
And some people have gone out with red, white, and blue robes, and other. So you could go out with a white robe, and you'd
was
be
was Ned Rehnquist a Nixon appointee?
Yes, he was.
Nixon's the guy who.
Did you see that latest Nixon thing that's on
isn't
HBO?
That funny? Yeah,
oh, it's hilarious.
Yeah. Harry Shearer. Is that it?
No. This is the one where they have all the whole movie is just Nixon clips of him talking the recordings.
Oh, I haven't seen that.
Oh, my God. It's unbelievable.
All right.
Anyway.
So Sandra Day O'Connor wrote a piece on Smithsonian.com where she says that it seems like nobody really knows where it came from. It seems like in the early days of the U.S., they decided that they didn't want the wigs the English justice had. And they had flashy outfits, and so it was sort of frowned upon. And by 1800, apparently, American judges were all sort of just settled on wearing black robes because they didn't want to be fancy like
those Brits.
Huh. Yeah.
But it's okay to have gold stripes on the sleeves.
Well, that's her point is that you could wear anything you want.
But they don't.
Yeah. Maybe in Hawaii, they wear like a...
Moomoos.
It's got to be hot.
Like a shorty robe.
It's got to be hot. Well, now I think we've all learned something here.
I think so. That's the takeaway from
Finally.
The show. That's what you get.
That's what I get. Shouldn't have brought that one up.
I'm the one who brought
it up. Hey, did Adam celebrate his 10th anniversary this week? You know, this is the 10th anniversary of the Daily Source Code this week.
He was actually very annoyed that I didn't know this.
Well, now, yeah, you should have come on the show last week and I could have prepared you.
Well, I didn't know this, and so he was hurt.
Oh, yeah. It was, well, now, nobody says it was the first podcast.
I don't know if it was, I don't even know what I don't know.
The first podcast predated that. It was Christopher Lydon did a podcast while he was at Harvard. And of course, our good friend Doug Kay did IT Conversations. With Dave Weiner, I think, who was on IT Conversations. That was a couple of years, but it was when Adam Curry started writing his iPodder software in 2004. And he then did the show, The Daily Source Code. It was released first August 12th, 2004, to say, I've released this software that will allow you to download stuff via RSS feeds, put it on your iPod. It'll automatically be added to iTunes when you put it on your iPod. And in order to make this feasible, you know, you gotta have something to do. So I'm going to make a show that I will distribute this way, and then you'll have something to test the software out with. And it was The Daily Source Code, which he did for many years.
Still does.
Does he still do it?
Randomly.
There's a really nice article on Ars Technica by Cyrus Farivar, who actually wrote the first article to use the word podcast in the New York Times. And then he wrote a big piece for Macworld on it when he worked at Macworld. He was a host of our first podcast back in the
day. Was he?
Cyrus has been around, but he wrote a nice little podcast retrospective this week on Ars.
Yeah. To celebrate 10 years since Daily Source Code, which I think many could say really is the first kind of commercial podcast that you could call a podcast.
It's hard to pick a date for when podcasts started. Yeah. That's as good a date as any.
Yeah.
Hmm. Yeah. Well, good for him.
Happy anniversary to podcasting. We are, by the way, I'm quick to point out, not a podcast.
You're a netcast.
I don't know what we are.
From people who love.
Well, that's one of the things.
That's good. I like that. I might want to change it to that. Netcasts you trust from people who love.
Yes. Yeah, I like it.
It's good.
It's good. I mean, there's Cyrus's story says nobody can really even define what it is or what it means or anything like that. Yeah, I always tell people it's like a radio without the listeners.
You do that. You do.
Hey-o.
Yeah.
You do Incomparable.
Yep.
You do several shows.
I do. Incomparable is like a network now, so we've got a bunch of shows on there. And then I do. There's a one called Clockwise that we do on Tech Hive.
By the way, congratulations,
Tech Hive,
to the Incomparable Tech Network.
Hive. Thank you.
What else is on the, so where is it? Incomparable.net?
Yeah, theincomparable.com, or you can go to incomparable.co. It's shorter. So it's a bunch of stuff. We got a Star Trek podcast, we got a movie podcast, we got a D&D podcast, we got a TV podcast,
awesome.
And then the main one.
And this
so
is
it's
independent.
Fun.
This is independent.
This is
me. IDG,
this is all me, and it's just nerdy stuff, and it's a
lot
of fun.
You must spend all day doing podcasting.
I dream of that. I don't currently do that, but it's
not
a lot of fun.
All it's cracked up.
It's Leo. I'll ask
no,
you for
no, we
some
should
help.
Talk. I mean, you know, this is great.
It's
good
a lot of
for
fun.
You. This is how I
you
got
wanna
started.
You want to do a merger acquisition?
I want to do an M&A.
I'm right down the road.
We could just
put them all together.
Smush it all together.
Which is the best of these six?
The Incomparable.
Oh, Incomparable's
the
awesome.
Oh, no, actually, I've heard that. Yeah, I just do it.
It's
yeah.
awesome.
Times.
Yeah. But these are all good shows.
Thanks
In
for
any
fun.
Event, Adam Curry and John C. Dvorak continue to host a show twice a week called No Agenda.
Yeah, twice a week.
So,
yeah.
And Adam still does DSC every once in a while. That's the one with, what is it, $10 million worth of airplanes strapped to my butt?
I don't know. I don't listen to that show. It's a music show. He's playing music. His favorite kind of music.
It's like new technology where you don't know whether it's going to affect your health afterward. We do know at least that you can host a podcast more or less for 10 years and not and still be alive and doing podcasts.
This is
Adam Curry proves it.
Steve Jobs on the stage of All Things D. You'll recognize, of course, Kara Swisher and Walt Mosberg. This is in 2005.
That's demonstrating the iTunes update that added podcasts.
Demonstrating the addition of podcasts to iTunes 1 year later.
Clips.
You have the audio? Is there audio?
Paid audio stuff.
You could try to sell podcasts, but the whole phenomenon is so great it's free. Okay. And I think what we're going to see is an advertising-supported model emerge just like free radio.
Yep.
Here's another one. Adam Curry is one of the guys that invented podcasting. And he has a podcast called The Daily Source. Let me go ahead and subscribe to that. And we can go listen to his latest one. You know, just click on it.
Your Daily Source Code, show number 180. Something remarkable is happening here. Radio is springing free of the regulated gatekeepers who've managed what you can hear since radio was invented. It's jumping into the hands of anyone at all with something or nothing to say.
With $16 million worth of airplanes strapped to my ass, and the next generation radio content in my ears.
We don't need no stinking transmitter.
I like to think I'm flying into the future. Podcasting is Adam Curry.
That's right, it's show number
Steve
180,
saying,
and it's Friday, everybody.
Who do I fire?
I've actually had to restart the show three times. My Mac has been acting up like a mother. I think it's something to do with the file system.
Okay.
Yeah, good
How
timing.
How do you control, say, dirty stuff? I mean...
All right, thank you, Kara. You don't. Steve's got to wonder, didn't anybody listen to this show before I played it? Steve, you're supposed to click 107.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Anyway.
That was pretty
funny.
He
was supposed to open the disclosure triangle and click the specified episode.
Right.
He just double-clicked on the podcast.
Just clicked something.
Actually, curious,
got what he wanted.
In that intro to the podcast, saying that, you know, it's not under control since it has been since the inception of radio, is not true. The inception of radio, which was in the early 1900s, was a free-for-all.
Right.
People were broadcasting whatever they wanted, wherever they wanted, and it was a...
As is often the case with a new medium,
yeah.
There's nobody paying attention.
Right.
Until there's money.
Right. Which is going to happen
in podcasting?
Podcasting, too.
The good news is, as Jason will attest, there's no money in podcasting.
That's not true. You're making good money.
I'm not podcasting.
You know, I had this conversation
with Mike Elgin. What is podcasting versus what we do? And I think Mike and I came up with the notion that it's really podcasting is the hobbyist broadcaster, somebody who is not trying to emulate broadcasting, not trying to emulate radio, but just having fun talking about something they care about. That's a podcast. It's basically fundamentally amateur. And what we're doing is much more like traditional broadcasting. I mean, this is more like a television studio.
Yeah, but it's fuzzy. I mean, I make money with The Incomparable. I've got ads. Mike Hurley, who used to be on 5x5, is starting his own relay, his own network.
I'm thrilled to hear that, by the way.
And he's hoping to make a go at it.
Yeah.
And I think it can be done. There is – some of it is about the business, whether it's a business or not. Some of it is about what the program is. Because a lot of podcasts, you're right, are people talking about things they love. I was listening to a podcast the other week. And I was really taken aback. I reacted badly to it. And it wasn't a bad podcast. It's just the way it was put together. It felt like an AM radio show.
Right.
And I felt kind of offended because, like, this isn't a podcast.
But it is, obviously.
It is, but it's like I had started to think podcasts meant very personal, sort of like people having
That's
conversations.
What I think.
Not something you'd ever hear on the
personal,
radio.
Personal, hobbyist. And what we do, I think, is more trying to bring experts on to discuss stuff.
It's podcasting.
Well, internet broadcasting.
You got no antenna, yeah. As far as I'm concerned.
Oh, so if it doesn't have an antenna, it's a podcast.
As far as I'm concerned.
All right, that's good.
So Netflix is a podcast.
You know, this kind of third degree is not
Orange is the New Black. It's a great video podcast.
Fun podcast. I love Orange is the New Black. They've really
podcast.
Taken it to the next level. Our show today brought to you by Stamps.
Point well taken. I have to now
reassess.
Pull back, and I'll come back with
A better. I'm going to give you a minute to think while I talk about Stamps.com.
Great operation.
Great operation. Really replacing the post office. Actually, no. No, that's the wrong way to think of it. It's not replacing the post office. In fact, post office loves stamps.com. It's just meaning you don't have to go to the post office. It means that if you do mailing professionally in your business, you can do it more professionally with stamps.com. You can do it at your desk using your computer, your printer. Imagine instead of, you know, licking and putting a stamp on an envelope when you send out a bill or a brochure or a mailer, you actually print right on the envelope with your corporate logo, your return address automatically filled in, the address of the recipient automatically filled in from your QuickBooks or your website. You sending packages? No problem. Stamps.com has a USB scale. You pop the package on there, prints out exactly the right postage, again, if you want, with your logo. If you're sending mail like priority mail or express mail, they'll automatically send an email to the recipient with the tracking numbers. Very pro. When postage rates change, unlike a postage meter, you don't have to pay extra to get the upgrade. The Stamps.com does it automatically at no extra charge. It's also, by the way, you get discounts you can't get at the post office, including insurance. You get discounted package insurance just by clicking a button. No more handwritten forms. Certified mail, return receipt, international customs mail automatically filled out. It really is fantastic. If you're doing mailing in your business, you must have a Stamps.com account. And I'm going to make it easy for you. When you visit Stamps.com, click the microphone in the upper right-hand corner. Use our offer code TWIT. We'll set you up with a $110 no-risk trial. It includes that digital scale, so you don't ever have to worry about putting too much or too little postage on your packages. And you get $55 in free postage you can use over the first few months of your account. You get an activities kit and, of course, a 30-day trial of Stamps.com. So, seriously, if you're in business and you're doing mailing, visit Stamps.com, click the microphone, use the offer code TWIT. It really will change your attitude towards mailing. And your clients, your customers, they'll really appreciate it. It's fabulous. Stamps.com. Little leak coming out of Best Buy. We've been very interested in these. I've been wearing the Android Wear watch. This is the LG. Samsung makes one. but they're square, they're kind of ugly, they're kind of bulky. We've been waiting to hear about the Moto 360. Best Buy leaked it out, $249, according to Best Buy, listing on their site for the Moto 360. They gave all the specs as well. Nothing unusual, nothing we wouldn't expect. 1.5-inch backlit LCD touchscreen, 205 pixels per inch, Gorilla Glass 3. You know, and the thing about Android Wear is the software is the same on all of these watches. It's really all about hardware form factor. It looks, I like the idea of round. Motorola is going to have a press event in Chicago on September 4th, five days before Apple's press event, and which I should go because I'm a big fan of the Moto X. It's my favorite.
You should go.
Favorite fan.
Chicago's phone. Fun.
Chicago's great this time of year. Nice and sweaty.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Not a good idea.
Not a good idea. But that's exciting. I mean, I think we're going to see both whatever the successor to the Moto X is, the Moto G, and the Moto 360 watch on September 4th. You agree?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's a lot of us are skeptical about the fact that the bottom part of the little circle screen is like missing.
What do you mean missing?
There's that little flat part where the screen doesn't continue. It's there, but it's not part of the screen. It doesn't show data. Right down the bottom, it's like a flat tire. And I keep thinking that if I was wearing that watch, that would drive me crazy, knowing that the whole circle isn't drawable. There's a little flat part down at the bottom.
That's like there's some electronic stuff.
Yeah, because they can't fit a whole screen.
But what
screen
do you
on there.
What goes there?
Nothing.
But I see something. Yeah. Oh, I see what you're saying.
Yeah, they mentioned that that's like tire. Yeah, part of the digitizer in the screen assembly that they cannot create a full circle.
Let me go to the actual site because you know this isn't much of a leak since they've had the website moto360.motorola.com up for some time. This is still a Google company. I don't know when this is going to go become Lenovo. Oh, I see what you're saying. That black crescent at the bottom there. Yeah, you can show this screen. There you go. All right. Well, we'll see. Maybe I will hate it. I didn't notice that till you told me.
Well, it's just a matter of time before you hate everything.
Wait a minute, that's
sorry,
your
I ruined
job.
It for you. But no, I love right that it's round.
I'm good to go right at the get-go.
Are you going
to
buy that?
You work
oh,
your
you
way.
Hate it from the beginning. Is
yes,
what I'm
you work your way to hate.
John feels the way we all will feel.
Someday, too, you'll hate
my
this.
Uh-huh.
Saves a lot of time.
I don't know what the, yeah.
Until I wear it, I don't know if I'm going to say
you've
I
got
like
a watch on. How many watches do you think you're going to buy?
I think it's going to look good because it is
I buy them all. It's my job, dude.
This is the dude. This is the one. Now it's just a watch.
Well, it
and
is.
Look, I can't do anything with it.
I'm definitely. Is that the Pebble, Leo?
No, I had the Pebble. Chad has my Pebble. This is the Android Wear.
I got my Pebble.
Oh, which is okay. to
zoom
my,
in.
Don't zoom in.
Zoom in and enhance.
Here, over here. I can zoom in over here. What do you want to show?
Hello, Google.
Zoom in.
Okay, Google. Moments. Apparently, somebody.
What did you get? Where did you get this? When did you get that thing? This is what you normally see. And then if a text message comes in or whatever, it'll fill the screen.
If you do a circle and then a line and the sign of the cross, that other screen comes up.
I don't know what you got.
I can
there,
do it again if you want.
Okay.
I mean the problem with the Wear is remember when Windows Mobile like literally had a start menu on it? It just feels a little too Android on the wrist. That said, I've been trying to make a conscious effort to spend less time on my phone, particularly, you know, being with family and stuff like that. And I would love to just take it off and put it in my bag and not even have my pocket, but then I'll never actually hear it.
Well, that's the funny thing about this. It almost always results in me pulling the phone out. So
well, but that's
I don't know what I've saved really.
I love the idea of being able to. I think one of the criticisms of Wear is it's hard to really limit who you get stuff from. But I think once that's in place, I mean, just for that reason alone, it sounds, you know, really having something, I think, sounds quite compelling to me. So
one of the reasons I do wear all these is I'm trying to find out what the real experience is. And, and generally, I would say nobody needs any of this stuff.
No, I mean, for me, I'm still wearing a Pebble a year later. And for me, it's all about the notifications.
Where is it?
Right here.
Oh,
I see it. I like the fact that it's I don't have to take out my phone sometimes because I see who the text is from.
This will let you respond to text. Not only respond, but respond with your voice.
This is a very
without taking out the phone.
Very
well, the other thing too is
light product.
Is it lighter than this?
No, it doesn't have any weight at all.
Well, let's see, compare it to that. Is that more substantial?
Yes, by a lot.
Yeah. I mean,
you bring in John to weigh things. He's our official.
He's a master of standards of scales, and balances. Yeah. Yes,
I can do that.
Go ahead,
no,
Ben.
It's not a touch screen.
The other thing is for people, I think the kind of underappreciated thing for watches in general is I think women in general are more likely to have their phone in a bag. And for that reason, I think the notification aspect is more compelling. I think I've certainly had that issue trying to get hold of my wife. But I think that's what makes what's going on.
Ironically,
right
now,
woman
wants to wear these because they're ugly and clunky.
Yes.
Exactly.
Women have taste. They're
really missing the point right now. And I think that's going to be the, you know, if the iWatch comes out, I think that's going to be what's really interesting about it. I wonder if it is going to be very explicitly marketed to women. I think Apple's products have traditionally been more popular with women than with men.
Yeah.
Wait
a minute, say that again? Apple products are more popular with women than men?
He nailed it.
Is that true?
Yeah.
I think that's true.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he's got, I mean, women.
Boys don't like
women,
Apple?
Women a lot of times don't have their phones in their pockets. They've got them in a bag somewhere, and so they don't even know if their phone is ringing. They can't do anything from remove. You know, you're fortunate if you're a guy and you've got it right there in your pocket. So I think it'll have more appeal, and that's why I like what I use the Pebble for. Is literally like, do I really need to look at my phone for this? Oh no, I don't. Or I can use it as like a remote control. But I really, mostly, it's just, do I need to? Is this text important or not? And it's not. I can just move on.
The other thing too, and this gets into the whole like phablet thing is. Here in Asia, which is Apple's future. It's the future of every tech company. It's much more common for men to carry bags. So in that particular case, I think it's even more compelling for the reasons it's compelling to women everywhere. I think it's also compelling to men here.
Huh. Yeah, it could be.
Why do men more often carry bags in Taiwan? Is that just cultural? They
wear tight pants.
Well, it's probably a cultural thing. I think it's also,
tight pants.
Well, you wear, you take public transportation more often. People might ride scooters, stuff like that. It's just, but it's more acceptable. And quite frankly, it's quite nice. I embrace the MERS.
You have a MERS?
With me. Of course I do.
Can you show us your MERS?
Yeah, let's see.
Indiana Jones has one.
It's out sitting out by the door.
See, that's the problem with merces or purses. They're never where you need them.
It's by the door.
By the door. Grab it on the way.
That's what he's doing.
Oh, exactly.
He runs out. It's a satchel.
I feel like actually.
There's one more thing, too, is I have so many keys. Like, there's very complicated doorways here. And just not having all the bulk in your pocket, it's quite nice.
I feel like, in fact, the MERS is very similar to the smartwatch.
I am stunned that you don't use a MERS.
Carry a MERS?
Yeah.
I just, much like the smartwatch, I keep trying to want to like it. I understand the utility and the value of it.
Yeah.
And after a while, I just give up. What did he do? Did he start your phone?
He did. He turned on my podcasting app while from across the table.
It was an accident. No, I don't know what I'm doing.
All of a sudden, John Syracuse's voice comes out of my pocket. It's crazy.
I should have warned you.
It's happened to the best of us.
Oh, I should have turned off Bluetooth, but I didn't. My mistake.
Twitter's changing the way the world works for verified users. You can now... say whether you're going to see tweets from other verified users or the unwashed masses. Twitter says it's just what we want is the verified users to interact with one another.
This is elitism.
It is absolutely elitism because Twitter realizes that most people who use Twitter don't post much. Mm-hmm. Or if they do, they post useless, silly stuff that's really only for their friends. And that the celebrities are the ones who really make Twitter valuable. So they're
to them.
To Twitter.
To the stockholders.
Well, who else should they worry about, right? Yeah, Twitter's not worried about you.
Well, I'm verified.
Well, there you go. Now, would you turn that on, that you only see...
No, never.
No. Because you're a man of the people.
I am a man of the people.
I think that's a little short. I think that's a little short term, though. I think in the long run, Twitter's goal is to have most people verified. And the reason is because if you can guarantee that's a particular person, you can build a profile on them, and they're more valuable to advertisers.
Right.
Oh, so I think this is more putting infrastructure in place. I think their goal in the long run is that everyone has a blue check, at least everyone that's a real person. And then, you know, the real Jeff Jarvis, not the Professor Jeff Jarvis.
Poor Jeff. Professor Jeff Jarvis. We'll talk about it. Of course, Jeff is one of the hosts of This Week in Google every Wednesday on the network, and he has been really going off about this Professor Jeff Jarvis, who quite...
It's a parody.
It's a parody, except that he started saying nasty things about a colleague who didn't know the difference.
A biting
and
parody.
Blamed Jeff Jarvis for it.
Yeah, biting parody. That's the way it works.
The only problem I have with Professor Jeff Jarvis is that he doesn't seem to be directly parodying Jeff Jarvis as well as much as it is like a whole broad cross.
Well, talking about him complaining, I want to bring something up. Do you remember when you did a show with David Pogue, who was blaming me for writing some nasty thing because he was busted for it? Was at the old cottage. And Pogue was going on and on and on about, oh, Dvorak said this, Dvorak said that. But it wasn't the real Dvorak. It was some
interesting.
Phone. Don't you remember this?
I do remember this.
Yes.
It's coming back to me now.
Yes.
And he thought it was you, but
yes,
it wasn't.
And I had to clarify this, and he had to
same
apologize.
Same thing Jeff's suffering from.
This happens.
Twitter doesn't seem to give us very good ways to prevent this from happening. They've been coming under a lot of attack. Robin Williams' daughter, Sad, had to leave Twitter because she was getting so horrifically trolled. There's stories again and again of Twitter just not... Actually, because it's a celebrity's daughter, now they might be doing something about it. But there were a lot of complaints just a couple of weeks earlier about trolls on Twitter.
Most harassment on Twitter either doesn't meet their standards or they don't respond when you report it.
They're not very cooperative.
No.
But I also understand what a difficult position that puts them in, because then they become judge and jury. Is this parody? Is this a troll? I mean, Professor Jeff Jarvis is... You could...
Well, the content
is... Now you're making music.
The content isn't the problem. The content is... it's the mistaken identity that's the problem, right? The assuming somebody else's identity.
Now, apparently, the professor that the parody account was making fun of didn't know enough to look just for the verified check mark.
Well, let me be a contrarian on two points.
Okay, good. Please.
One, the Professor Jeff Jarvis account is really funny. Like,
I agree.
It is.
Out of respect to Jeff, I don't follow it.
I agree.
He doesn't. It's not a parody of Jeff Jarvis. It's a parody of all the Silicon Valley. Like I talk about the whole changing the world thing and all that sort of stuff. That's the stuff he's taking on. And
His most recent tweet, honestly, the Sermon on the Mount was the first TED Talk.
Yeah,
that's funny.
Yeah.
I like it.
Most parody accounts I follow for a couple of days and I unfollow because they actually end up not being as funny as the retweet that I saw. He's one of the few that I've followed for a long time because he's consistently quite good, and it really does skewer, you know, the Valley kind of mindset in a very, you know, distinct sort of way.
I kind of wish he didn't use Jeff Jarvis's name, because it's actually, you're right, it's very funny. And if he had Professor Jerry Jarvis.
Or if he was fake Jeff Jarvis.
Or even just fake Jeff Jarvis, this would be fine. Hyper-glocal thinkfluencer.
Yeah.
Journalism 3.0 advocate, co-founder at Mogadishu Reinvent Unconference. Inventor, CIO, and chief imagineer at Nextify Labs Unworkspace. This is actually awesome.
Yeah. And his hyperlink is to app.net. That kills me.
I love that.
Every time.
Yeah, the anti-Twitter.
Well, so my other objection, though, is, just to be, you know, it's super explicit. I mean, what happened to Zelda Williams is terrible, and I certainly understand where Jeff Jarvis is coming from. At the same time, you know, what's been dominating the news this week has been what's happening in Ferguson. And in that community in particular, there is a whole thing called Black Twitter. Twitter has really given a voice to a view on what's happening here, that if this had happened 10 years ago, it'd be a one-sided story. Like, there would be one side of the story coming out. It probably wouldn't even be a big deal. And you get all this stuff. There's good with bad. The bad is you have this abuse going on, and it's terrible, and it absolutely needs to be dealt with. But we need to be careful not to do the baby with the bathwater sort of thing, because the same mechanic that makes abuse possible also makes the marginalized, the people who have never had a voice, gives them a voice, lets them get things out that weren't out previously. And that's a really great thing. And I think it's really easy to over-index on one or two examples and to forget about the good side, just as it's good to overly focus on good stuff and not appreciate the bad stuff that goes with it. I mean, everything's a trade-off. And I think Twitter in particular this week, it's been really striking to have these kind of totally opposite narratives happening without realizing they're actually two sides of the same coin.
Very well put. And it does put Twitter in a very difficult position because you want to foster the kind of things that are happening out of Ferguson. I mean, this is, and we've seen it again and again. It happened out of Cairo. It happened out of Istanbul. I mean, this is Twitter's amazing power. But it's very powerful, and it can be used against people as well.
Well, and the thing is, a lot of that power, like you talk about the things in Cairo, even the things in Ferguson, like there is a story in the New York Times about Twitter and the effect it's had. And there was this quote from the head of police, like basically saying, "Oh, they use Twitter." The tone of it was very bothersome. But the idea is, as soon as we get an idea of Twitter should control, it's only a small mm-hmm. step to the government should get Twitter to control. And then it's like, well, okay, so where's that line being drawn? And again, I'm not at all saying that what happened to Zelda Williams is or to women everywhere. Like what happens to women on Twitter is terrible. It's horrendous. And Twitter, I think, does need to figure out some solutions. But I think, you know, there's certainly a everyone should appreciate and be thoughtful about what's happening, because it cuts both ways. There's a lot of sort of censorship / limiting objectionable speech. Like those, there's a very thin line there. And I can appreciate Twitter's hesitation. And I think, you know, people who push on one side also need to be cognizant of what's happening on the other.
So that
goes for people who celebrate it too.
It's a really good point. Now, Twitter does provide one tool that anybody can use, just the block tool. And I block people.
They've changed it now. So it's a double, it's you can also squelch and block.
You can mute people. You can block people.
They've advanced it. So now you can also report them, and you can send nasty, you know, you get a page that's abusive, you can send the page in.
Yeah. But the problem is, I think some of these harassers, like they open up, like this happened to Zelda Williams, they open up like thousands of accounts.
It's impossible to block somebody permanently because they just create a new account.
Absolutely. Well, if they want to go through all that effort, it's easier to block than it is to create the account. So I'd go for the block.
Well, Glenn Fleischman wrote a piece on Boing Boing this week about these collaborative block tools. And that's an interesting,
boy,
it can be
is
scary.
That a mistake.
But it's an interesting idea where you really have a community trying to do things because they feel like Twitter is not able to help them.
The blacklist.
And Jeff Jarvis has been very pro on this blacklist. But I have to point out that the one blacklist that's been created blocks President Obama and Lady Gaga, as well as...
Well, it's a cautionary tale in a way, because what it's saying is that you can have a block list, but any block list is going to have the biases of the community that's policing it. And so in this case, there are some very specific kinds of political arguments that are not even the opposite. It's like not quite orthodox that get blocked. But it shows that there's a need for this sort of thing out there.
Well, it shows the danger, right? I mean, because like as soon as you get into this area... Like there's it's the law of unintended consequences, and it will always rear its head. And again, I don't have the solution. I think probably the most interesting one I've heard is the idea that you should be able to block at mentions from newly created accounts, and which I think would, you know, is possibly make sense. But as soon as you get into any of these areas, like stuff's going to happen. And that's it's not just Twitter, it's the internet in general. I mean, the internet is the most open sort of thing, and that's awesome. It's great. It lets things like what I do be possible, and also lets terrible things happen as well. And it's not an easy solution. Anyone who thinks that it is on either direction is doing kind of the whole medium a disservice.
Yeah. No, I think you're very well said. I think you're right. It's clearly challenging. I don't know if there's what the right answer is.
The right answer is to shut it down.
There's some people that think that.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing what Twitter has become, I have to say. It is,
it's used by the State Department to cause trouble overseas, for one thing.
It's used by everybody to do everything. It's like the internet.
Ferguson's a great example where, you know, we wouldn't know what was happening in Ferguson. And there was a point...
Wouldn't it have sprung up somewhere else? Wouldn't it have happened on Facebook
or
somewhere else?
But although Facebook, the point there is that Facebook filters your tweets or your status updates. And Twitter, there's much more word of mouth. And that first night of riots in Ferguson, where the police were shooting rubber bullets at people and tear gassing people, the TV networks weren't there. They weren't on... And Twitter was reporting the news live, including by journalists as well as people on the ground. And you got that moment, and this has happened every now and then, where you realize, wow, Twitter is doing a better job at this story, and the mainstream media is not doing as good a job on it. And that happened because of the Ferguson hashtag, and it happened mm-hmm. because there was nobody in control. And to Ben's point, it also happened because there was no policy that allows, say, a police department to suppress accounts for illegal activity, which would probably yet. Have been abused in that situation to shut down the people yet. In Ferguson.
Yet.
Not yet. Yeah, thank you. Again, John has moved all the way to hate.
John, are you going to sign this document? Because I can't allow you into our studios unless you do.
I was really stunned that you have this document.
Why are you stunned? Every one of these people, these good people here.
Did you guys all sign this?
You all signed this document, did you not? Protecting us from liability. Don't they look like a litigious bunch?
No wonder you have the audience has shrunk.
No, we've been having signed that for years.
Really?
Yeah.
Huh.
It just says you won't sue us. And
yeah, I know. I understand what it says. I was stunned because I thought that this
mostly,
seems new
most,
to me. It seems like some lawyer got into the operation.
Totally a lawyer got into it. It was written by a lawyer. But mostly it's to warn you that you're in a working studio. There are wires on the floor and there are hazards. And you should be aware of the fact that this is going to be a hazard environment.
For people out there who don't know what we're talking about,
this is a liability waiver.
This
you
is
have
an
to
important document. Read carefully. Waiver of liability. So if you come to the TWIT operation.
You can't sue us afterwards.
You have to sign off on this.
I think that's fair.
I don't think it's unfair. I mean, it's very common.
We did that at Tech TV.
Well, I was just stunned that you'd gone along with this sort of
The only reason,
bureaucratic crap.
I'll tell you why it happened. Somebody fell.
Oh.
He got tangled up in the headphones, and he fell. And he injured himself fairly severely. Was taken to the hospital.
Wow.
He broke his knee or something.
This is great.
And he was fine. He was a big fan. But we then started getting calls from his insurance company.
Oh, yeah.
And, of course, that's the problem is you guys wouldn't sue us, but your insurance company sure as hell would.
They know what they're doing.
And so this is really as much for them as it is for you.
Okay.
And that's unfortunate.
But yeah, what if a light drops on my head, somebody asks?
You've got no recourse. You're screwed.
I can throw something.
Actually, I don't think you can sign a piece of paper that really gets us
no,
off
that's
the
true.
Hook.
It's,
right?
It's
I mean,
all,
if
it's
you get
bogus.
Hit by a light.
These are bogus.
No, like if there's gross negligence on your part, you can still. Yeah.
You acknowledge when you come in here that this is an active and functioning studio and office with a broad range of equipment, wiring, and furniture.
There is a lot of crap here.
broad range of furniture.
I should read this, and you should rewrite this in plain English.
There's a lot of crap in this place.
There's a lot of crap.
And wires.
Guest acknowledges the activities
Apparently,
are inherently
they don't
dangerous.
Know what a gaffer is.
And fully realizing the dangers of participating in the activities, fully assumes the risks associated.
You will die.
And by the way, they do define activities as each and every activity arising from or related to the visit.
The visit. Sounds like a name of a movie.
Well, the visit is like your desire to visit and tour the brick house. We call that the visit.
I think that was an episode of Under the Dome.
It goes on. I actually started a dramatic reading of this a while ago.
You should do it as a German.
I shall read section 6, severability. No, I'm not going to do that.
No.
You know, why is Boing Boing looking more like medium, by the way?
Well, they went to a new design that is long form. They're focusing
Looks
on long form.
Just like
it
medium.
It does look a lot like medium.
Big I don't like pictures. It. I like the old Boing Boing.
I like the old Boing Boing.
I think they
the side blog.
I think it wasn't working for them.
An internet
business wise. So
it was what is a compendium of interesting things or something like that. Well, as a sign of the times,
somebody says we should sue for an interesting twit. Very funny. Zing.
Thank you.
Very funny.
By the way, at no point during the visit are you guaranteed anything of interest will happen. It says that right here.
Yeah. No, it does say that. It's
I believe that's
six.
On the website's terms of service, too. This may or may not entertain you.
A sign of the times. Facebook is going to start flagging satirical articles as satire because so many people reshare them as true. From now on, when you share it, it's a pilot project, but I can guarantee you this is going to spread, and I think it's about time.
The old satire hashtag.
The satire hashtag. You will see, this is a Facebook spokesperson told Ars Technica, we are running a small test which shows the text, in brackets, satire, in front of links to satirical articles.
Extra funny when it's
This
labeled.
Is like the guys who can't write an April Fool's column without the warning at the beginning of the column.
This is April. You know, the real culprit here is a great, I think, column in the New Yorker called The Borowitz Report. Andy Borowitz writes satire for The New Yorker, but it's satire that cuts so close to the bone that it often seems like it could be true. Like this article, Millionaires Unite to Defeat Minimum Wage. That sounds plausible.
Yeah, it does. Mm-hmm. Sound.
That sounds,
it sounds
real.
Sounds like a real possibility.
Yeah. John Travolta apparently screwed up Ukraine calling it cranium and Crimea calling it IKEA. That's, I could see him doing that.
Well, because of the Oscars.
Because
right?
of the Oscars. Yeah. Anyway, I think it's...
Well, the people that use Facebook in and out, day in and day out, are susceptible to this sort of thing. They should be... I don't know what to...
I hate to say I sort of see
it's
some value
pathetic.
With it, but if you've got an audience that doesn't understand these anything, things, yeah. and when you're reposting, it loses some of the context and you're reaching people who don't get it.
Also the case, and we know this, people reshare without reading.
Certainly. There are studies yes. that show that most shared
They read the headline, they go, read. Oh, you got to see this.
You
got to
have my
the
experience
article.
Of not reading this article.
I don't have time to read the article. I'm just going to share it. Mm-hmm. Matt Honan, in another interesting experiment, decided to like everything he saw on Facebook for 2 days.
I'm one of his Facebook friends, and it really
what was it like?
Everybody is like, Matt, what is? Are you? Did you get hacked again? Are you okay? Did you have a stroke?
Right. Did you have a stroke?
Did you go off your medication? What happened? Because he liked everything, and so there's like Matt Honan likes crazy things,
and it all gets in your stream.
Yeah. Not all, but some, right?
Not in mine.
Some of it bleeds through. And then his stream becomes completely insane.
He says, my news feed took on an entirely new character in a surprisingly short amount of time. After checking in and liking a bunch of stuff over the course of an hour, there were no human beings in my feed anymore. It became about brands and messaging rather than humans with messages. Likewise, content mills rose to the top. Nearly my entire feed was given over to Upworthy and the Huffington Post. Yep. As I went to bed that first night and scrolled through my newsfeed, the updates I saw were in order: Huffington Post, Upworthy. Huffington Post, Upworthy. A Levi's ad. Space.com. Huffington Post, Upworthy. The Verge. Huffington Post, Space.com. Upworthy. Space.com. That'd be a good rap song.
I guess Space.com is some marketing something. Yeah.
As soon as I went to bed, I remember thinking, oh, crap. I have to like something about Gaza. As I hit the like button on a post with a pro-Israel message. And that's the problem. Immediately, you're sending a strong signal, probably stronger than you intended, to Facebook. Oh, he wants more of that. By the next morning, the items in my newsfeed had moved very, very far to the right.
Mm-hmm. I thought there were experts behind all this stuff that were making it so you actually got stuff that you wanted to.
Well, if you like everything, I think his point here is if you like everything, what you expose is just how much of what you think is your core Facebook experience
Shouldn't
is actually based on.
Shouldn't this be taken into account
like
by
behavior.
Some expert in the back room?
Robert Scoble.
Is he in the back room?
Oh,
what?
They finally get him out
Robert
of the front
Scoble,
room.
I have been complaining about my newsfeed for a long time, and Robert said, I'm going to take you, and I'm going to show you how to make your newsfeed. My newsfeed,
you
he said,
have to
is
do
incredibly
this.
Great.
You should not
and
have
it has
to do
a
this.
Lot to do with what you like.
You should you un- not you have stop, to do this.
You unlike corporate things. You start liking things that you really do want more of.
You should not have to do this.
By the next morning, my newsfeed had moved very, very far to the right, continues Honan. I'm offered the chance to like the Second Amendment and some sort of anti-immigrant page. I like them both. I like Ted Cruz. I like Rick Perry. The Conservative Tribune comes up again and again and again. I get to learn its very particular syntax.
Well, this is really great.
Usually it went something like this. A sentence recounting some controversial news. Good. A sentence explaining why this is good. A call to action, often ending with a question.
Mm-hmm.
Once I see this pattern, I start noticing it everywhere. And it's true. It's the Upworthy pattern, isn't it? It tells you how you won't believe what happens next. How you feel about something. You will cry when you see this video.
Yeah. What happened to the top of this guy's head?
Yeah. This guy lost his head.
You won't believe how.
You won't believe what happens next.
I think, though, this going back
I would
to us
that.
Going back
there
to
is
us talking
one with
about
the guy's head missing.
When we're talking about Twitter, when Ben was talking about Twitter, this is a good example of how Twitter and Facebook are different right now, at least for now, which is Facebook decided its users couldn't deal with the stream of everything that they have signed up for, and so they are aggressively trying to guess what you'll like. And Twitter, so far, doesn't do that. The Twitter timeline has some ads in it, but it's basically untouched.
Yet.
And that time is coming because I think Twitter is going to be saying how do we modify these feeds as well.
Doesn't this just prove, though, that this is doomed to failure, what Facebook's doing, that it's just crap? And that
no, because
you're better off with what Twitter is doing, which is just let everything through. Don't anytime you try to intermediate, you screw it up.
No, I disagree. I think I think John Gruber says something on his site when he linked to this, like, oh, this is like Facebook's wet dream or whatever. And I think that's actually exactly wrong, because Facebook doesn't want this to happen. The entire goal is to better understand you, to better understand your interests, and the result is twofold. One, you'll increase engagement. You'll stay on site longer. You'll come on the site more frequently. And I know Facebook gets a bad rap in tech, but if you look at the actual numbers, they're being quite successful in this. Not only their engagement continues to rise, and it continues to rise quite a bit. And then two, obviously, when it comes to advertising, they have that much more accurate of a profile of who you are and what you're interested in. And so I think... Yes, you can abuse anything, but the reality is no one likes everything in their stream. And if anything, the speed with which the stream adapts is almost like more impressive than anything. It shows how sensitive it is. And I found the same thing as Scoble, to be honest. I mean, like I use Facebook a fair bit, and because when I use it, I get a lot of value by going into it. There, I see primarily a few people that I care about. And they dominate my feed, and I don't see much crap because I've always been very careful with my likes.
I must have done something really wrong, because I thought I'd been careful about my likes, and my Facebook feed is awful.
Well, and you know, the marketing groups use it to, you know, here's a contest, but you have to enter by liking our page or in order to
post
on our
page. Well, I don't do any of that stuff.
And that helps junk up your feed. But, you know, Ben, I think Gruber's point was more that not that liking everything is the Facebook's wet dream, but that Facebook's goal here, like Google's goal or any of these ad-driven businesses' goal, is to get as much signal as possible out of your behavior so that they can market to you better and, yeah, get more engagement. And that's absolutely what Facebook's doing. I think Matt's experiment was really about making it as kind of ridiculous as possible, because that's Matt and he writes very funny articles, to show that your feed is being manipulated by Facebook. And that's a kind of a simple thesis, but it is true that what you like determines what you see. And if there's not a lot of serendipity left on Facebook, it really is about Facebook trying to make guesses about exactly what is going to benefit them in terms of you being engaged and in terms of what they can sell you.
Meanwhile, I went to my Facebook page and I've been sucked into a video of a cat fishing for another cat. This is why I don't go to Facebook.
A cat fishing for another cat.
See that cat? See fishing pole? See who's on the other end of it? Another
cat. This is
so I mean, not to have this be the Facebook 101 session, but if you hover over that,
can I unlike it?
No, you can say block this post or whatever, and it's a negative signal, and that more than anything probably will clean up your feed pretty quickly.
I don't want to see this.
Oh, how could you not want to see that?
that's
come on.
Don't do it for that.
I don't want to see that.
Why?
So you're saying that
if
I spend more time working with my feed, curating Facebook, I'll get a better feed.
Yes, you will.
Well, it doesn't take long, honestly. Like just a couple days of like actively curating it, and it cleans up really quickly. And I mean, it's pretty impressive, actually.
You used to have to unfriend your person from high school who you don't actually care about, but you've said, sure, I'll friend you on Facebook. You don't actually have to do that anymore. It's very easy to just say, I'm not interested in what this person writes, and then they go away.
They're still your friend,
but you never see them.
You don't see them.
Yeah. Which is how you like it, probably.
Yeah. Okay.
Very insincere.
If you missed... anything. What's insincere?
That idea, what he just described.
Like, pretend to like people.
Yeah.
You don't do that all the time?
No.
You don't bother. You just,
right.
You don't like anybody.
No, I like a lot of people.
Have you been listening to the podcast, Leo?
He eliminates the middleman and goes to the later point where we hate everything. Again.
Everybody. Hey, you know, we had a great week, John. I bet you'd like to see a house ad right about now.
House ads, I think, especially the way you do them, are fantastic. I mean, there's a lot of people that do house ads in different ways.
Yeah.
But yours
are
outstanding.
Wouldn't get your hopes up on this one.
Oh, okay.
In fact, would you mind signing this disclaimer before we begin?
No, I'm
not. Let's take a look at what happened this week.
I got to talk to my lawyer.
On Twit.
Does he just do the one dance, or does he do other stuff?
Groot, I'm sorry.
Oh.
Previously on Twit. Triangulation. the author of The Martian. Andy Weir, so great to talk to you.
More people would buy it from Kindle than download it for free from my site.
All About Android.
OnePlus, which is the maker of the phone, which I have purchased and love. So they launched this ladies first contest. Post a photo in this thread. And the 50 most well-liked ladies will be chosen to get an invite. No nudity, please.
This week in Enterprise Tech.
We welcome into the show, Twill. That's right, This Week in Law.
I've often wondered what would happen if we combined Twill and Twyatt and unleashed that evil spawn on the world.
Tech News Today.
Can't bring myself to do it. I don't want to see the tech sad tweet.
Before you do it, get a couple of hankies. These are Jason's sad tweets. 2 months without RT or favorite.
Twit. Technology for your eyes and ear holes.
This is what it looks like when two humans kiss from the inside of
one. Oh!
Disgusting. Oh! Why are they showing this sort of thing?
That. Chad, why'd you have to do that?
Chad is
and meanwhile,
sick.
Here are my sad tweets. 2 years without a retweet or a favorite. I like the music.
Hacking him in.
This is sad tweets.
Your sad tweets are about Facebook and about whether podcasts are
netcast. Like the Jimmy Fallon bit.
It is
a little too close.
It's the same thing.
Too close.
No, it is. It's just, but it's with your tweets, which is great.
Okay.
He's using Twitter quite well, I think. Don't you think?
I think he's doing pretty well. I actually preferred the Craig Ferguson approach to the Twitter. But
what was that? Where people read their angry tweets?
No, that's actually Jimmy Kimmel.
Jimmy Kimmel does that.
Yeah.
Boy, I can't keep
actually,
track
that's
of it.
A very good bit.
That's very funny.
He brings the people celebrities
who are nasty tweeted at to read the nasty tweet. That's one way to handle trolls. Just you know.
Mm-hmm.
But what is Ferguson? I like Ferguson.
Ferguson is very meta. I would say is the postmodern of all of these talk shows because it's bizarre.
Well, it's got a robot co-host, no band, and a horse guy and a horse got foot.
And it's mostly ad lib that show. I read an interview with the guy who does the robot.
Love him,
but he just brings. He reads some bull crap tweets that are crap, and then he ridicules them and then throws them off the thing and then stops. You have to see it.
It's just
and he
like,
does it every
there's nothing
show.
Good here.
He has a huge introduction to the segment that's always reproduced. Produced, overproduced, and then the segment itself, he just doesn't do it. Doesn't do the segment.
He's anti-television. He's leaving, I'm sad to say.
Well, he got a deal in his contract.
He got a buyout.
Yeah, he got a buyout. And if he renewed, he would lose that buyout, so he took the buyout.
It's like $40 million doing nothing.
It's apparently pretty
good
high.
For him, I
he'll
think.
Be
he deserves
he'll
it.
He'll do something else.
He's brilliant.
He's a smart guy.
You know who I saw at dinner last night? Chelsea Handler. Right down the road here a piece.
What? At what restaurant?
Central Market. But she's an example of somebody who her Comedy Central show has ended, but she's going to Netflix, where she's, I think, going to do the same thing for Netflix, right?
Yeah, and that's the big question of how do you do a timely show on Netflix?
What's she doing in Petaluma?
We had a nice dinner. We bought her a couple of drinks. It was good.
So I go over to the Petaluma Market over here to pick up some lettuce and some stuff because I need for dinner tonight.
Yeah, a little grocery shop.
What a ripoff. If you're in a farming community, this is a farming community. We're in Sonoma County. What would you be paying $3 for a head of lettuce or $1 for some green onions?
Get this man some wine.
I'm telling you, this is a scam, this town.
John, I never look. John C. Dvorak. Sad tweets, ladies and gentlemen. Our show tonight. Hey, before I do that, actually, let's see what's coming up on the week ahead. Mr. Michael Elgin. Oh, wait a minute. Yeah, there.
HTC is announcing something on Tuesday, August 19th in New York City.
I know
possibilities include a Nexus 8 tablet, a Windows Phone handset, or a wearable device of some kind. On Wednesday, August 20th, Samsung and Barnes & Noble are having a joint announcement where they'll roll out the Galaxy Tab 4 Nook. That launch will also take place in New York City, but at a Barnes & Noble store in Union Square.
Is he making this up?
And Sprint's new CEO said at a company-wide town hall meeting Thursday that he would announce new, quote, very disruptive prices or wireless plan, so we'll be looking for that announcement as well. Back to you, Leo.
Announcement City next
week.
Seems
unlikely.
I think, HTC is going to do their HTC One, the current version, the M8, with Windows 7, or Windows 8, rather, Windows Phone 8, which will be awesome. Be a nice phone.
You don't know that.
Windows Phone hasn't had a good week.
It's not been a good week for Windows Phone. I bricked my 1520.
What?
sad because that's a nice phone. I love that phone. 6-inch screen.
How
gorgeous.
Did you brick it?
It's Paul Thurrott's fault.
Hmm.
He told me, no, it isn't really his fault. He told me that because I had the 1520. It was on Windows Phone 8.1. He said you can get the update to 8.1, or actually it was 8.0, and you can get the update to 8.1 by joining the developer preview, which is free. So I did, yeah. Downloaded it. And then Microsoft, in their infinite wisdom, decided to freeze the firmware for those of us who did that because they were having some problems. It was crashing some people's phones. So Daniel Rabina from Windows Phone Central, who was on Windows Weekly on Wednesday, said, well, just roll it back. It's easy. You just get the Nokia software removal tool or revival tool or whatever, NSRT, and run it on a Windows machine. So I did, and it bricked the phone.
Oh.
Won't even, I can't get anything, nothing out of
you
it.
Want
it
you gonna, what are you going to do about it?
Give it to you.
I'll take it.
You want it?
I can get it unbricked. I have a.
I would love to see that.
Okay.
Oh. You think you could?
Oh, yeah. I know I could.
That'd be awesome. It don't ever tweet stuff like this because then you get everybody. Nokia USA, mm-hmm. Cortana was tweeting at me. It's like, and the first thing everybody tweets is all the stuff you've already tried.
Yes.
And yes. I just said, look, I Googled it. I've tried everything that you could find on Google. You got anything else? Because I've done all that. I'm not an idiot.
Mm-hmm.
So, by the way, one of the things, and he had a Cortana or Nokia USA sent me a screenshot.
Couldn't
so
you just ask Cortana
press,
to unbrick
like,
it?
Power up, power down, power up, power down, off, 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 camera, phone, up.
It sounds like a game thing. It's some it. Old code just, to get
Cortana
on.
Is trolling you, Leo.
Maybe.
Yes, totally. Up, up, down,
maybe
down.
I was being trolled. Maybe it's fake Cortana. Mm.
Should be better labeled.
Okay, Google. So apparently, it turns anything.
It works for anything.
Apparently, people that listen to the show, I was reading this, they're to be at home and somebody says, okay, Google into the podcast. And it
was worse than that. Today on the radio show, I said, yes, sirree. And somebody's Siri.
Yes, Siri.
iOS 8 went off, right?
iOS 8
it's
went
supposed
off.
To be, hey, Siri.
Yeah, I said,
hey, Siri.
I said, yes, sirree. Yep. And it went off and it then transcribed everything I said and then searched for it on the web. He sent me a screenshot.
Yeah. That happened with the Xbox too. There was an advertisement.
Yeah, it was Aaron Paul who is Jesse Pinkman from Breaking Bad. It's a great one. He says, okay, Xbox. He's talking to his Xbox, and at one point he says, "Play Titanfall," and he starts to play Titanfall. Apparently, people were complaining because in the middle of the ad, Titanfall was launching on their Xbox One. Yeah. I know it never happened to me. Here it is. Okay, I found this on the web for her on the phone. Questions better serve you. Want to stay with California, North Carolina? To everybody, please check it out. Mm. Which was its failed transcription of what I was saying.
I would think
all because I said yes, sirree.
This is going to be a new thing. Somebody's just going to shout out, "Hey Siri, send a text message to my mom."
So
saying,
iOS 8-
"I'm sorry for what I did."
That's a good one.
It's time to come clean.
It's time to come clean.
Yes, send that.
Is this something new in iOS 8 that it's always
that's
listening?
An iOS 8 thing that you can turn on where if you say,
and
hey,
does it
hey,
know
Siri.
It's your voice?
Well, that's the question. I'm unclear on
I doubt
on
it.
What they're going to do.
That's too much work.
The Motorola X, you know, if you said, okay, Google, okay, something.
Okay, Google.
No, it wasn't okay, Google, because it was Motorola. I think it was, anyway, it would talk to you, but you trained it 3 times with your voice.
Mm.
I hope they do that with Siri or we're going to be, yeah, that's going to be funny.
It does work with Google Glass. It's voice independent on right. Google Glass.
So you can yell at somebody with Google
you
Glass?
You can yell, okay, Google, take a picture, and it'll take a picture of it.
That's a bad idea.
I like that.
That's great.
And then they'll punch you in the nose.
Because
everyone
Hello,
knows
Mojo?
People wear
Hello,
Google Mojo. Glass are so macho, so mm-hmm. tough. They have to be. They're wearing Google Glass.
Yeah.
That's right.
Our show today brought to you by Squarespace.com, the secret behind some of the best websites in the world, Squarespace. Makes it easy for you to create a great website. You don't have to know HTML or CSS or JavaScript. You just need to want to make a beautiful site, have a vision for what you want. They have incredible software and hosting together that make it a great experience. We've never been able to break a Squarespace site. Let's everybody go to noagendashow.com.
Noagendashow.com.
That's a Squarespace site. Break it now. Noagendashow.com. Everybody is watching. Go there right now. And see if we can bring it down. We can't. If you are a developer, they have a great... see? It boom. Came right up, didn't it? Snappy. Keep hitting it. Keep hitting it, everybody. Keep hitting it.
Yep, we get that.
If you are a developer, they have a great developer platform with syntax coloring and all that stuff. They have templates that are just stunning, but there's some stuff behind the scenes you may not realize. First of all, every template is a state-of-the-art HTML5 template, mobile responsive. When you upload an image, it automatically makes 9 thumbnails for every possible size. It reflows the screen no matter what size or shape the screen's on. So there isn't a mobile site per se. Every site looks great on every size screen. They also have every template has e-commerce. They've got a logo creator tool, which is very simple, but individuals and small businesses with limited resources can create a simple identity for themselves. It's beautiful. They've got apps for the iPhone and the iPad that are second to none. In fact, they won 4 Webby Awards for their apps this year. The Metric app, for instance, will let you get page views, unique visitors, social media follows for your website. They've got a blog app that makes it easy to post, moderate comments. Squarespace is gorgeous. It's beautifully done. And right now, free for the next 2 weeks, just go to squarespace.com. Click the Get Started button. You don't need to give them a credit card. Just start playing with it. You can import all your existing stuff. They've got importers for all the major blog APIs. A better web awaits you at squarespace.com. All I ask is if you decide to buy, you use the offer code TWIT, and you'll get 10% off on your new account. 10% off. And you'll be showing your support for This Week in Tech. Squarespace.com, $8 a month. And when you register for a year, that gives you the free domain name, too. Squarespace.com. Offer code is TWIT, 10% off. If you use
they're giving you a free domain name nowadays?
If you register for a year, yeah.
Oh, that's a good deal.
Yeah, I think it's, I mean, you know, it's not, what, how much does it cost? $15.
Well,
but still,
yeah,
it's something,
still,
right?
So, actually, but it's more, a rigmarole to go through it to get
that's
it over
the
there.
Thing. It's more important than that. They hook it up so that right. you don't, yeah, that makes it much easier. You know, it was 33, hard to believe, August 12th, 1981. You know what happened 33 years ago on
yeah.
August 12th?
Uh-huh.
You do?
I do.
You were there.
I was?
Yeah, you'll
okay.
never forget it.
Okay.
The IBM PC was
oh,
released.
Right. I was actually at that.
I know you were.
Yeah, I was.
The 5150. It's 33. It seems like it's older than that in some ways. I mean, look how far we've come in 33 years. Your phone now has, you know, 10 times, oh, 1,000 times the power of the IBM
closer.
PC. I mean, it was a 4.77 megahertz 8080, right?
Yep.
Let me see if I can find all the specs, because it was expensive.
Had,
you remember what it cost?
It had a tape interface, too.
Yeah, it had a cassette interface.
You could put a floppy in it, but it had a cassette interface. Yeah, they cost a fortune. They cost about $3,500.
Incredible. Here's the IBM PC's debut
Strip,
reference room.
You could get it for like
$1,600 if you didn't get anything.
If you got nothing. It was
which meant you couldn't do anything.
No, you needed to buy a memory card. You needed to buy I.O. You needed to buy floppy disks. You need to buy a monitor.
Pretty amazing.
Came with a keyboard, I think.
It was 20 inches wide, 16 inches deep, 5.5 inches high, 21 pounds. 21 pounds. Yeah, the disk drive, it's 25 pounds.
Yeah, 4-pound disk drive.
Yeah. Memory, it came with 40K built-in
Should
ROM.
Should be enough for anyone.
That's and 16 to 256K user memory. That was the top.
Yeah.
256. Did come with a keyboard. Nice keyboard. Still to this day, a good keyboard.
Yeah, that's a fact.
Cassette player jack for cassette attachment. 5 expansion slots. Built-in speaker for musical programming. Really?
Yeah. It's just squeak.
What kind of musical programming is... Oh, this is a... It comes standard with power-on automatic self-test of system components. A basic language interpreter in 16K.
Yeah.
That's the standard.
I'd like to think that musical programming is you could write basic programs using like a musical keyboard, like play a little something and it would...
Wouldn't that be cool? Make but I think program. It was more actually...
A bunch of noises.
Like,
a
like
noise.
This. I'll play it for you right now. This is... You've seen sure. this. You know what I'm talking about. Ladies and gentlemen, I give you the IBM PC. Oh, there's an ad. Don't you hate that?
Well, I think it's a
this
three-second
This ad is brought
one,
to you by Squarespace. Yeah. So here we go.
Get ready. Name this song.
Yeah. pretty good.
That's floppy disks. And one hard drive. That's probably the bass.
Yeah, it sounds like Angry Birds.
Is that the Surface commercial?
Somebody somewhere has a version of this with the actual lead singer of Soft Cell singing along, Mark Almond. Wait a minute, here we go. This is, of course, it's on BuzzFeed.
You won't
Where
believe
else?
What happens next.
You won't believe what happens next. Does this have an ad too? No. That's the one you should listen to. Let's jump ahead here.
Seems to go nowhere. I've lost my life, for I
of course, the drives are actually playing the vocal track notes, right?
So. Right. What I really feel sorry for is Mark Almond, who pretty much that's it.
Yeah.
That was the highlight right there.
Yeah.
It's as good as it got. As long as we're talking robots, how about a robot that makes hamburgers... 10 hamburgers a second? Wait a minute. That can't be
no,
right.
Pretty
10 seconds a hamburger.
That's still pretty fast. Especially when you're dealing with a soft tomato.
The burger robot is poised, according to Jason Dorier, writing for Singularity Hub, poised to disrupt the fast food industry.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's for sure.
Our device isn't meant to make employees more efficient, says co-founder Alexandros Vardakostas. It's meant to completely obviate them.
Mm-hmm.
Fortunately, somebody who might work at McDonald's doesn't know what the word obviate means. So.
No, neither does McDonald's.
McDonald's doesn't either. The man who invented pop-up ads says, I'm sorry. There's the burger machine, by the way.
Yeah, Ethan, I'm writing about the saying sorry thing.
Ethan Zuckerman, tell us about that.
Well, the problem with the article, I mean, it's basically saying how, you know, I think it's called the Internet's Original Sin, and it's complaining about advertising. And it's one of those things where it's very fun to write an article if you're willing to forego any semblance of basic economics and understanding like how the world works.
He says in the subhead, it's not too late to ditch the ad-based business model and build a better web.
Do you remember in the early days?
It's the same thing. It's the same thing as the Twitter. Is the Twitter discussion like there's a good side and a bad side to everything. The good side of the internet is that it everyone has a platform, everyone has a voice. The bad side to that, from a certain perspective, is that there's always going to be something that's cheaper than what else is out there. And like to reproduce an article costs $0, which means any general piece of crap is going to be $0. And if you want to charge for it, that doesn't happen by magically waving your hand and saying, I'm not going to use advertising. You're going to pay for it. The reality is no one's going to pay unless you can really like deliver value in a way that people find it to be meaningful. And advertising is is inevitable when it comes to something like the internet with it's frictionless content. It's like podcasts. The reason why Jobs was right that podcasts would be free is because people make podcasts for fun, for passion. Like there's always going to be a free alternative, and that's just that's a result of economics, not a result of someone making a mistake. There's no genie put back in the bottle.
Actually, John here and I have kind of differing models for podcast success. No Agenda is totally donation driven,
right?
And it's done quite well.
Yeah, we've done okay.
And I think that's fine.
You would have probably done okay too, but not with the big studio and all the stuff.
Well, yeah, I wouldn't have done this level of okay. Right. And we couldn't have grown to the, you know, 30 shows.
But
and all
you
of that.
Could have done that model if you stayed at the
we
cottage.
We did. We wanted
probably
to.
Probably have as much money in the bank.
Yeah, well, that's another story. I can talk about that if you want.
No.
But, no, I wanted to do more. And the same with you. You're trying to build more of a network. We tried donations in the beginning, and they were fine. You're right. For one man, that would have been enough to live on, but it didn't give me a chance to do a second show or add additional staff or build a studio or any of that stuff. The ad model's great. You know, I think it was Mike Elgin who said, I like it because it's fundamentally democratic. Anybody can – these are free, and they're kept free, even though we have a fairly high cost of production by the fact that advertisers are willing to pay for it. And we only do an ad every half hour. It's not like – we overwhelm you with that.
Yet.
Well, no, I mean, you're right. That that's a big yet. I don't want to ever do more than that. I never wanted to do that much. But the reason it could be yet is because there is downward pressure on pricing, and that's coming from groups like Podcast One, who are charging radio rates for podcasts, very cheap rates.
Yeah.
And what that does is it put radio, because nobody paid attention to the number of ads, the quality of the experience for the listener, they merely paid attention to how much money can we make, has 19 minutes an hour of advertising.
Which is typical of TV, AM radio. Too, 20 minutes.
And, 20 minutes.
Right.
Yeah. So that's what happens if you push the price down.
Well, the reason that we knew, I mean, we could have done that too, but we felt that it was the kind of show we do. We cannot afford to.
Well, you don't want advertisers because you want to be able to speak your mind, right?
Pretty much.
Yeah.
Well, there's also, you get the two tiers of people. You get the people who just kind of are interested in what you have to say, but they're not going to pay you anything for it, and they want to listen, and that's good. And then you've got your big fans who, I think the challenge for a lot of podcasts and other things on the internet is, can you do a two-tiered approach where you give things away, but there's also something that people who want to support you or who want even more can give you some money. I mean, Ben, you are running a website that's got some free stuff and also has paid subscriptions. It's the same sort of story.
Freemium.
You've got a little bit of both.
Yeah.
No, exactly. I mean, freemium is really the only model I think that works on the internet. Because the reality is when there's so much out there, why should someone, and this goes to apps, it goes to all these sort of things that's rising up. Like, why should someone give you money sight unseen? It's unrealistic. I mean, because they can just go visit a million other things. And so the internet, it gives you, I have free distribution. It doesn't cost me anything to serve people for free. And this is very different than before. And so people can come to my site, they can read my articles, they can build trust, so they can assume, man, every time I come here, that's actually pretty interesting. And now they're much more willing to spend some money to get more because they have a reasonable expectation that it's going to be worth their money.
Well,
and that's...
You know, you say that freemium is the only thing that works, but you're talking to Leo here, who's making like $8 to $9 million a year, not using that model.
I meant as far as charging people directly. Like, it has to be.
Here's freemium. My problem: it's hard to charge for something you've given away.
We don't have it that much.
Right, you have
trouble.
To find something else that's additional that goes beyond.
We don't
and
do,
then my
we
other
don't,
problem
yeah.
with that is copyright.
I would
protection,
argue
because
against
as soon
this.
As you start charging for something. You want to control distribution of it,
but
and then you have to copy protect
it. I think the people who are giving you money are not giving you money because you're handing them something that's super exclusive that they can't
they
give to a friend.
You.
They want to support you, and they want to. And plus, you can give them some convenience. They don't right. have to pirate it. They don't have to find a place for it. And they feel good because
I
they
think,
like you and they want to give you money.
I think you have plenty of models. I think the freemium model is a perfect model for certain kinds of things.
I agree.
Want to actually do DH Unplugged in that using the freemium model. Because when we do our stock tips, that's the value of the show. That because people, when it comes to the financial world, all they want is stock tips.
They want to know how to make money. And if you give them information that will help them make money,
they will pay for it. That would go to a freemium firewall.
Yeah. I hope you have them signing a disclaimer.
Oh, we always have the sign-ups, of course. But anyway, so we could do that. But for the straight-up donation model, I think that works fine. And I think the pure commercial, I think all three models work fine. I disagree that the donation model doesn't work.
Here's an interesting point that Ethan makes in his article. He says the problem with online advertising is it makes so little money. It's worth so little. Last quarter, Facebook reported it had 1.32 billion users, connected 2.91 billion in revenue, made a profit of 791 million, profit margin of 27%. Clearly, he says, Facebook's doing a great job making money from ads, but the profit per user is 60 cents. And that's a fascinating figure because Facebook reports users spend 40 minutes a day on the site, 60 hours a quarter. So they're getting paid a penny an hour for that user.
Leo, you just articulated how crap you think Facebook is. So it sounds like they're getting charged exactly
it's
what
it should
be.
It's worth a penny an hour to me.
Well, no, that's exactly the point. I mean, the whole thing with the internet is it makes it trivial to generate content.
Right.
And that, by definition, means that content is worth less.
I think it's possible to make content that's worth more, right? We're trying to make content that's worth more.
Oh, I mean, I charge people $10 a month, $100 a year, and I have quite a few subscribers who think it is worth it. And I'm not saying that it's impossible. I'm just saying like the non-differentiated content is by definition going to go to zero. And that doesn't mean you can't differentiate.
And this is my point about Podcast One and others. It gets harder to differentiate because there is pressure to lower your rates to be and an advertiser say, well, look, I can get the same ad on some other podcast for a buck. Why are you charging $10 for it?
Well,
I have to tell my sales team, you cannot, that's it. You can't lower the price, but there's considerable pressure to do so by the advertiser.
Yeah, but you're a specialty operation.
Well, that's how you handle it, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, premium content. You also talk about the results and that your audience is more attached and all of these things.
Yeah, but it's funny because that's true, but the advertisers still, they're going, well, but it's only a buck. I know I won't get the same results, but it's only a buck. It's hard to convince them. You're getting what they are getting what they're paying for, but it's getting harder and harder to convince them.
Yeah, I don't see any evidence of this that it's getting harder and harder. You have more advertisers every time I come on the show.
No, take it from me. It is getting harder and harder.
Okay, I'll take your word for it.
It's not like I'm throwing in the towel. I don't mean to say we're broke, but I notice it's getting harder, and it worries me that the pressure there is downward.
Well,
pressure.
It is also a cycle.
Well, the other thing, it's increased competition. I mean, and if you look at it, take the Facebook thing, for example, he's complaining that Facebook is only getting, that people are spending all this time on Facebook and they're only worth this little bit of money. Like, what that is in economic terms is excess value, and that's all going to the consumer.
Right.
And so I think because the people who have the big podiums, the soapboxes, are being hurt by this. Everyone talks about internet economics as being this terrible thing, when from a consumer perspective, it's actually pretty great. Like, I have access to this network. I live in Taiwan. I have full access to the lives of my friends and family.
Isn't that amazing? Yeah.
And I get it for free. Like, the internet, like, everything has its good sides and its bad sides. And what irks me about this article, I think I'm going to write about it, on Monday so everyone can check it out. It totally focuses on one side and it ignores, one, the good things about it, and two, is in this fantasy world that pretends like it could have ever been anything differently. And I'm more irritated at the people that have retweeted it. Like, I feel people that should know better.
They didn't read the article. They just liked the headline.
Yeah,
seriously.
Full circle.
Let's put satire around it, and then everybody will be okay with it. Our show today brought to you one last ad. Do you mind?
I have nothing to do with it.
Okay. I'm just checking.
Whether I mind or not is irrelevant.
One last ad.
I think you should do two more ads.
I would love to.
Rake it in.
But no, I've limited it to one per half hour. We are in our fourth half hour, our fourth ad. Ladies and gentlemen, I tell you about ZipRecruiter.com. If you are hiring, if you're looking for people, you know that there are plenty of places. The internet really makes it easier to find staff. But there's a hell of a lot of job sites, more than 50. Plus, there's LinkedIn and there's Twitter. And there's lots of places you can go to post an ad for a staff. Where do you want to go? What is the best place to go? Well, ZipRecruiter solves all that by posting to 50-plus job boards with a single submission and to LinkedIn and Facebook and Twitter and Google+. It makes it very easy, too. As those resumes start rolling in, you can use their system to view and share formatted resumes, screen candidates quickly and easily. You'll get a customized jobs page for your website, a company careers page as well. You could track and rate applicants from their first visit to the hire. It is very powerful stuff, and I want you to try it free right now by visiting ZipRecruiter.com/twit. Yes, employers should visit ZipRecruiter, but so should job seekers. It's a great place to go to get a job as well. If you want to find the perfect hire, you got to go to ZipRecruiter.com. Join over 200,000 businesses. Well, make it 200,001 because we use it too. ZipRecruiter.com/twit. 4 days free. You can see exactly how it works at ZipRecruiter.com/twit. That's one thing you don't have to worry about, John. That's good. You don't have to hire staff.
We try to run on a low budget.
Staff's what kills you.
I would think staff
they expect to be paid.
And they have to. Well, I don't think that's the worst of it. You have to manage them.
HR.
We actually recently
outsourced our HR.
Why?
Some guy named Jimmy.
Although, at least not a guy named Ben.
No, actually. ADP, who does payroll, also we can outsource HR through them. It's not working out so great.
I wouldn't think so.
No. That's how I know what a challenge it is. Do you work in HR? Is that why you're laughing?
She's laughing.
I think she works in HR.
She might be an HR person.
She knows all about it. Here's a site that's probably a parody site, Mary Tyler Whore. I think that's probably a parody site.
Mary Tyler Whore.
Yeah. See, if I were Mary Tyler Moore, I'd be offended. I'm just looking at my Twitter. I just noticed.
So you're following Mary Tyler Moore?
No, I'm not.
Well, then why does it show up at
all? This is the new Twitter.
Oh, that's where they slip all this crap in.
They slip crap in. I don't want to follow her. How can I block that?
But why would they slip that in? Is she paying extra?
I don't know.
Is this a parody site?
Pretty sure I'm not following her.
I'm sure you're not. Click on it and find out. On her.
Oh, I am.
Says you're following
Let's
her.
Let's unfollow Mary Tyler Moore.
What little did he know.
Oh.
Ooh.
So much for that,
I don't remember following her. I'm just saying.
Uh-huh. Ooh, whore. Click. Where's the like button? Okay, onward.
That's it. I'm done.
Oh.
Wait a minute. Let's see. There's a couple of quickies we could do here. Comcast tells a customer the only reason he's getting bogus charges refunded is because he recorded the call. That's fair.
What?
He actually had to play back the recording he made to say, no, you said this would be free. And then they said, well, it's not free. It shouldn't be free, but okay, you got a recording. I guess we'll make it free. So the moral is record every call with Comcast.
Mm-hmm. Illegally, I might have, in the state of California.
Yeah, because we're a two-party state, but it's simple. When they play that recording that says calls being recorded for quality purposes, say, I'm recording this call. That's it.
Did an attorney tell you that?
Read it on the internet.
You read it on the internet. Okay. Talk to your lawyer.
You don't? Okay. This is what I believe to be true.
This Week in Law.
I'm reading it right now. I believe this to be true, that they don't have to consent. Their assent is by merely staying online. So if you say to you can't say it to a recording, but if you say to a human, I'm going to record this call, you don't have to say, do you mind? Is that okay? You just say, I'm going to record this call. And that's it.
You're fine.
Yeah.
Well, if they say, I don't like that idea.
If they hang it up, that's fine. Then you have to call another Comcast rep and say the same thing until you find somebody who doesn't. I wonder if they would hang
up. How about changing the law?
No. I think two-party is good. It's not in every state. It's only about, I think, half the states.
Why? What's so good
about
it?
I think if one party is recording, shouldn't you be able to record it yourself at that point? If they're recording your call,
maybe you're right. Because they do announce it at the beginning of all these
calls. That would be a good improvement in the law, at least.
Yeah.
If they're going to record, you can record.
Yeah.
To verify their recording is accurate.
By the way, Leo, did you tell me you were recording this show? Because I don't recall doing that.
It's not a phone call. It's a Skype call. I can do anything I want. Actually, is that the
case? I forgot to hit record anyway.
Oh, good. All right. We forgot to record this show, so you're all right.
That's great.
Oh, Samsung Bart SmartThings, one of our sponsors. You see, they're shrinking already.
Yeah, there you go.
SmartThings was a Kickstarter that got its funding on Kickstarter and has now, it's a home automation hub. It's actually a really great product. I use it. They just sold out to Samsung for $200.
$200.
I'm sorry. I left out the million.
Well, it is a Kickstarter. That's the owner package on Kickstarter. The owner tier.
A couple of zeros.
Owner tier, $200. One
I gotta wonder though. The same thing happened with Oculus VR, which was also Kickstarter. Is there an ethical issue raised by this that you give money to a Kickstarter project, you fund them,
you feel good about it.
You're not investing in their company. You're
getting stuck. You know. There's ways.
Yeah, but don't you feel a little bit like
you've been taken?
You've been taken.
That they maybe didn't need your help. Well, no, you Kickstarted them into the stratosphere with that.
Yeah, it's
well, where's my
thing?
Portion
you
of the
go to the company itself and give them money directly when they have them sign some document and you get a couple points. You can do that.
Do you think that people understand when they go to Kickstarter that this could happen? They do now.
Yeah, I think people,
the Oculus thing really, I think, kicked that up.
Oculus pissed people off.
I think people think of Kickstarter as a store to
pre-order
things.
They should have given everybody. I think if the Kickstarter, you should put some money in Kickstarter and you should get something out of it.
You do. In this case, you got a SmartThings set.
Well, then fine. What's the big deal?
So it is like a store in that respect.
Yeah.
Same thing with the Oculus Rift. I got the developer edition. I think people were more pissed off with Oculus because there was this great hope it would be a grassroots.
Well, the whole idea was we are supporting you so that you can do this thing that nobody
Without
else wants
Facebook.
To do. And
then
you exactly.
sell out. You sell yeah. out.
It's the risk.
Yeah, I think it was more viewed as a moral failing, not that they didn't get their product.
Yeah.
That's what idealism will get you sometimes. You can't disappointed.
That's what I say.
Sometimes.
Always.
I was hedging for the internet TV netcast broadcast podcast.
I've been infected by John. Sorry about
you
that.
You guys are turning into cynics.
We are.
All right. Well, here's something that'll make you happy. The folks at Tesla have decided to give people who own Model S Teslas an infinite warranty on the drive unit.
Yeah.
Well, infinite miles.
Infinite miles. It's 8 years or infinite miles, whichever comes first.
Well, wait a minute.
8 years.
How do you drive infinite miles in 8 years?
Well, you can't.
That's the point.
You can never reach infinity.
So it's basically an 8 year warranty.
It's an 8 year.
No matter how many miles you drive.
This
week in math.
And you, how many miles can you?
How does that work exactly?
How many miles can you drive? Anyway?
Not more than 100,000 a year.
That would be outrageous. You would have to be charging it all the time.
Yeah. You literally. Yeah.
Yeah.
You couldn't drive it that
much.
Well,
actually, that's a good point. How long does it take to charge it?
Overnight. I think you can only go about 300
miles a day. At a supercharger, I mean, that would be a good math problem. And for This Week in Math, first episode, or pi episode, or
yeah.
the pi episode.
Episode would be that. Would be literally how many miles could you drive
if you use a supercharger
for 8 years.
But wait a minute. If 20% of the time you use a supercharger and 80% of the time you home charged it.
Sure. But okay. You're driving as much as possible.
It's not going to
be. You could probably ask Google.
And not that many people are going to be using a Tesla.
Wolfram Alpha could solve it.
Here's the deal. All these brilliant like tech guys, what people don't appreciate is they're all brilliant marketers. And like this is yet another example.
It is.
No.
Because the headline on the blog post doesn't say 8 years or infinite miles. It says infinite mile warranty.
No, I disagree. I think everybody does, at least people in the Valley realize it. This whole industry is one massive sales scam. Everything is sell, sell, sell.
And not only is it infinite, I'm going to make it retroactive to every Model S ever sold. Mm-hmm.
The problem is the assumption that sales is bad. I mean, if we are going to buy into the hype that we're quote unquote changing the world like that. That requires
here's the
people
best
to change
sales,
and to be sold to.
Here's the best sales line in this blog post by Elon Musk.
I agree with
Musk.
That, Ben.
Here's the best line. To investors in Tesla, I must acknowledge this will have a
That's easy for you to say.
This will have a moderately negative effect on Tesla earnings in the short term.
Bull crap.
This is going to cost us money, but we believe in doing this.
Oh, yeah.
In the tiny sliver of cars that are going to be over the old mileage number at before
sliver.
8 years, really?
You just as a warning.
Don't throw me in the briar
patch. This may actually be an attempt to cover up some revenue problems in the next quarterly or the next.
It's because of our infinite mile
it's a
warranty.
Possibility.
It's a nice
that
piece
stock
of marketing.
Is so inflated.
This is brilliant marketing.
It's a nice piece of marketing.
Because the headline in
drive
every
it as much as you want, we don't care.
Yeah, the headline everywhere is not infinite or 8 years. It's infinite. In fact, I'm looking at the headline. It says here, Model S drivetrain warranty increased to infinite miles. It applies retroactively.
And nobody else does that.
Nobody does that. Who would do that? I'm going to make a car with a 1 year or infinite mile warranty.
Whichever comes first.
Whichever comes first. 1 year or infinite miles. It's the same thing. Mm-hmm. All right.
Pretty much. More bullcrap. It's good, though.
I like this premise that basically all of Silicon Valley is just one big marketing
You know where
scam.
I found I was at a party, well, a big party at Scott Cook's place, actually. It was a big mansion.
Founder of Intuit.
And I was in the back, and I had said something stupid.
Apple board of directors
I
member.
Had something stupid to say about, oh, you know what, this is good for the economy. Or something. And this guy went off on me with this. He says, you're in the Valley. You don't realize that this is all a crock of crap. This whole system is set up. Just to extract people's money.
It's a castle in the air, a house of cards.
It is a scam.
A pyramid scheme.
And I walked away from that very upset, and then I realized, he's right.
So what? Well, as Ben says.
That's your backup.
Nothing wrong with that.
No, there's nothing wrong with it.
Not that there's anything wrong with that.
As long as you get some of the action.
I just want a piece.
Anyway, so I'm all in on that.
I just want to tell everybody who watches this show is warranted for infinite miles. If anything should break in this podcast over the next 8 minutes or infinite miles, I will give you your money back.
I thought it would be a week. Until
the next twit. That's good. Ben Thompson stayed up late or either that or got up early to join us this week. It's what, like 8 in the morning in beautiful Taiwan. Are you in Taipei?
I'm right across the river from Taipei. So
across the river.
Easiest to say Taipei.
But you know what? He is a type A, and that's why he writes a lot.
Type A.
Zing.
Zing. How's the podcast? Brand new podcast, Exponent. How's it going?
It's going very well. We're up to 13 episodes. So,
just a little tip. Most podcasters skip episode 13, just go right to 14. But it's
not true.
Too late
totally
now.
I've never heard that either. That's bull crap.
Totally not true.
Okay. I give you an infinite warranty or 13 episodes, whichever comes first. Good. I'm glad it's doing well. And it's the same kind of stuff you write about in Stratechery?
To a degree. I think we're particularly interested in kind of the impact on tech, of tech on society. I think a lot of stuff we talked about, like for the Twitter stuff, for example, or BuzzFeed and native advertising we talked about this past week, also kind of the effect that tech is having on jobs and the way that it's really upsetting.
It's life. Tech is now life. We were debating editorially whether we should cover Ferguson or not. And some are saying, well, it's a big tweet story. But of course, everything's a big tweet story now. And the fact that there is tech in any story does not make it, in fact, a tech story.
Well, but that's the whole point, though, is I think tech kind of spent its first 20, 25 years kind of eating itself, right? Like, different companies would start up to challenge other tech companies. And now it really is infiltrating and affecting almost every industry. And that's going to have big consequences, right? Not just economically, right, but also societally. And that's kind of what we're focused on.
I actually read with great interest, and we didn't talk about it, your article, Is BuzzFeed a Tech Company? The debate, is it a tech company or a media company? We debate that here.
It's a media
company.
Are
we a tech company or media? We're a media company.
You're a media company.
We're not a tech company. We use technology, but we're not.
Who doesn't?
But BuzzFeed's getting valuations much more like a tech company.
Yes, that's the scam.
The guy from Groupon was on the stage at the D conference a few years ago, and a bunch of people said, "Well, wait a second, is Groupon just really coupons. A tech company? It's a marketing company on the internet."
Well, I mean, is Uber a tech company? Is Airbnb a tech company? I mean, this actually applies to
none of
the
them
majority
are tech
of
companies. Tech companies, Intel.
Why does that matter? Whether it's a tech company, I mean, what? It's just a word.
Well,
it's just a name.
Matter.
What does it matter?
Matters to me.
Because
well, that's the point. That's what's changing.
Yeah,
is like it used to be about Intel and Apple and Microsoft. But now these new companies, they're not. And so when a new company come along, so I mean, like Cisco is there, and then Jupiter Network has come up, and they're challenging Cisco. Right. Like it's a tech versus tech sort of thing. Uber comes along; they're not looking to compete with another tech company. They're looking to compete with taxis. And maybe eventually UPS and VedEx, all this sort of
but
stuff.
But with a back end that tech enables that couldn't exist without
deal.
Tech. Right?
Well, it's not a tech company.
Well, I mean, but the economics are like a tech company.
Let's save this for another day.
Well, if the economics are like, I agree with you. They are like, but that's part of a scam. So I'm... And Leo, well, you're going to close the show first?
No, you close it out. Leo. I'm taking off. I have a tech company.
Leo has to go pee.
Well, I can. Yeah. If you put the camera on me, well, and I can do. I can say it as well as anybody else.
You gotta thank everybody.
Oh,
all right. So well, thanks. Thanks to our four sponsors today, Casper. They make mattresses and sell them to you on the internet, and it comes in a little box. Also, Stamps.com, Squarespace, and ZipRecruiter. That is the end. Leo is in the bathroom. We'll see you later. Thank you, John Dvorak.
Yeah, thank me. Yes,
for bringing the show and making it really happy.
Well, don't forget yourself.
And thanks to myself. Thank you
Let's
very much.
Thank each other for a while.
All right.
And then I'll do the... Oh, well, he's...
Ben Thompson, thank
Ben's
you.
Been,
in Taipei,
Ben,
Taiwan.
We actually got the closeout by Leo, so we can... You want to do it together? You want to do another...
You take it, man. You're here
okay,
more than
well,
me.
This is going to be it. This is another twit is in the can.
Doing it for ALS, but who am I going to challenge after this? All right, I know who I'm going to challenge.
Wait, let's just strategize.
Scoot back just a little, Leo. Just a little. Right here.
Okay. No. Head straight up.
Oh, God. It was a little chilly.
Okay, now I challenge John C. Dvorak, Adam Curry, and Jason Calacanis. Go out and dunk yourselves. Thank you, everybody. Another twit is in the can. It is brisk. Oh, my God.